without armor, but not without weapons. Laurentia Viper has abandoned her beloved panther for now, despite its prowess as a hunter. Instead, she has two shaggy wolves sitting at her heels, their eyes, ears, and snouts all twitching. Both are fearsome to behold, but just as skilled at detection as they are at fighting. No one will catch my mother unawares with them at her disposal. Julian Jacos and Queen Annabelle flank Cal. She is more prepared for battle than the singer uncle, her small, thick form belted into a flame-orange uniform, sculpted by snug body armor. Her hands are bare, even of her wedding ring. Julian is not so protected. His eyes are ringed by dark shadows, hinting at a night with no sleep. He remains close to his nephew, standing only a few inches away. I'm not sure who is more protective of who. The King of Norta himself has burnished red and silver armor, not to mention a gun on one hip and a gleaming sword buckled to the other. No cloak or cape drapes across his shoulders. It would only get in the way. Cal is barely a man, but he seems to have aged overnight, and not from the impending battle. He is no stranger to war or bloodshed. Something else hangs on his heart, something even an invasion can't distract from. He raises his shadowed face, watching me as I approach. How long do we have? I ask aloud, not bothering with pleasantries. Cal is quick to answer.
The air fleet is on the wing,
he says, casting his gaze to the south.
There's a storm out to sea, moving too quickly. I'd wager there's a Lakelander armada inside it.
It's a tactic we used ourselves in the Battle of Harbor Bay, but in far fewer numbers and with much less strength. I shudder to think of what a nymph-born assault might look like with the Queen of the Lakelands herself leading the charge. As before, I picture myself swathed in my steel, sinking quickly through deep and dark water, never to surface again. I try not to let that fear bleed into my voice. Their objective? It's the best way to fight, and fight back. Identify what your opponent is trying to do and calculate how best to stop them. Behind Cal, his uncle shifts uncomfortably. He lowers his eyes, touching his nephew on the shoulder.
That would be you, my boy. They get to you, and all this is finished before we have even begun.
My father remains silent, weighing the outcomes. What it means for him if Cal is captured or dies. We still aren't married. The Kingdom of the Rift is not so irrevocably tied to Norda, just as we weren't tied to Maven. The last time enemy forces attacked Archaon, House Samos was prepared, and we fled. Will he do the same again? I grip my teeth, already feeling a headache form on top of everything else.
Maven's escape train is still in use, Julian continues.
In reply, Cal shifts smoothly out of his grasp.
We can get you out of the city, at least.
The young king pales, his skin turning the color of old bone. The suggestion makes him sick.
And surrender the capital?
Julian responds quickly.
Of course not. We'll defend her, and you'll be well out of danger, far beyond their grasp.
Cal's retort is just as quick and twice as resolute, not to mention predictable.
I'm not running.
His uncle doesn't seem surprised. Still, he tries to argue valiantly. And in vain.
Cal, I'm not going to let others fight while I hide.
The old queen is more forceful, seizing him by the wrist. I despair of this family bickering, but have little recourse, even as the clock ticks against us.
You're not a prince anymore, or a general, Annabelle pleads. You are the king, and your well-being is integral to...
As with his uncle, Cal gently extricates himself from her grip, peeling off her fingers and removing her hand. His eyes smolder and burn.
If I abandon this city, I abandon any hope of ever being a king. Don't let your fear blind you to that.
Sick of this nonsense, I cluck my tongue and say the obvious, if only to save precious time. The remaining high houses will never swear to a king who flees. I lift my chin, utilizing all my court training to project the image of strength I need. and the ones who have will never respect him.
Thank you, Cal says slowly.
I point one finger at the windows, toward the cliffs. The river has changed course, and it's rising, high enough to allow their largest ships to come this far upriver.
Cal nods, grateful for the return to the subject.
He shifts, putting some distance between himself and his relatives, crossing to my side.
They intend to split the city in two, he says, looking between my still silent father and his own grandmother. I've already given orders to even the guards on either side of the city and supplement with the soldiers still in our service.
Ptolemus wrinkles his nose.
Wouldn't it be better to gather our strength, fortify the square and the palace, keep ourselves united?
My brother is a warrior as much as Cal is, but no strategist. He is all brutal strength, and Cal is quick to point out his error.
The Signet Queens will feel out which side is weakest, he says. If both sides are balanced, they won't find a weaker side to prey on, and we can pin them in the river.
Concentrate the air fleet over the city. It isn't a suggestion, but an order, and no one shoots me down. Despite our impending doom, I feel a surge of pride.
Use their weapons on the ships.
If we can sink one downriver, we'll slow their pace. A dark grin plays on my lips. Even nymphs can't keep a ship full of holes afloat. There is no joy in Tiberius Calor when he speaks next, his eyes flickering with some inner torment.
Turn the river into a graveyard.
A graveyard for both kinds of blood, silver and red. Lakelanders, soldiers of Piedmont, enemies. That's all they are. Faceless, nameless, sent to kill us. It's an easy equation to balance, with the people I love on one side. Still, my stomach turns a little, though I'll never admit it to anyone. Not even Elaine. What color will the river be when all this is over?
We'll be outnumbered on the ground.
Cal begins to pace, his words taking on a manic quality. He's almost talking to himself, puzzling out a battle plan before our eyes.
And whatever their storms cook up will keep most of the air fleet busy.
My father still hasn't spoken a word.
They'll have red soldiers among the silvers, Julian says.
He sounds almost apologetic. Again, my stomach churns, and Cal seems to feel the same trepidation. He falters a little in his steps. Annabelle merely scoffs.
That's one advantage, at least. Their numbers are more vulnerable and less dangerous.
The rift between Cal's closest advisors yawns like a canyon. Julian almost sneers at her, his usually calm manner fading a little.
That's not what I mean.
More vulnerable, less dangerous. Annabelle isn't wrong, but not for the reason she thinks. The Lakelands haven't eased their treatment of Reds, I say. Norda has. The withered stare from the old queen is a thing of lethal beauty.
So?
I speak slowly, like I'm explaining battle theory to a child. It rankles her delightfully.
So, the Lakelander Reds might be less willing to fight. They might even want to surrender to a country where they'll be given better treatment.
Her eyes narrow.
As if we can rely on that.
I shrug with a practiced smirk, raising the steel pauldrons on both shoulders.
They did in Harbor Bay. It's worth keeping in mind.
The bug-eyed looks of the silvers around me are not difficult to interpret.
Even Ptolemus is perplexed by what I'm saying.
Only Cal and Julian seem open to the idea, their expressions measured but oddly thoughtful. My gaze lingers on Cal, and he meets my eyes firmly, inclining his head in a small, almost invisible nod. He licks his lips, vaulting into another round of planning.
We don't have any new blood teleporters, but if we can somehow get you two, he gestures to Ptolemus and me, onto the battleships again, neutralize their guns. My children will do no such thing.
Volo's voice is low but resounding, almost vibrating on the air. I feel it in my chest, and suddenly I'm a little girl again, cowering before a commanding father, willing to do whatever I must to keep him happy, to win a rare smile or show of affection, however small.
Don't, Evangeline. Don't let him do that. My fist clenches at my side, nails digging into the flesh of my palm. It grounds me somehow. The sharp pain brings me back to who I am and the cliff we all stand upon. Cal glares openly at my father, the two of them locked in a silent battle of wills. Mother remains quiet, one hand resting on the head of a wolf. Its yellow eyes stare up at the young king, never wavering from his face. My parents don't intend to fight at all, or let us do it either. In Harbor Bay, they were willing to send us into the fighting, risk us both, for victory. They think this battle is already lost. They are going to run. Father speaks again, breaking the tense silence.
My own soldiers and guards, my surviving cousins of House Samos, are yours, Tiberius, but my heirs are not yours to gamble with.
Cal grits his teeth. He plants his hands on his hips, thumbs drumming.
And what about you, King Volo? Will you sit back as well?
I blink, stunned. He all but called the King of the Rift a coward. A shudder runs through my mother's wolf, mirroring her anger. My father has his own schemes already working. He must, or else he wouldn't let the slight pass so easily. With a wave of his hand, he brushes off the accusation.
I don't have to buy loyalty with my own blood, he says simply, jabbing back. We'll be here, defending the square. If the Lakelanders strike the palace, they'll find quite the opposition.
Cal grinds his teeth, gnashing them together, a habit he'll have to break if he ever hopes to hold a throne. Kings shouldn't be so easily read. His uncle looms close at his shoulder, his own watery eyes alight as he stares. At father. Almost smiling, Julian opens his mouth, lips parting to draw in a long, threatening breath. I expect my father to drop his gaze, break eye contact, take away the singer's weapon. But then that would be an admission of fear. He would never do that, even to protect his own mind. It's a standoff.
Is that wise, Jacos?
My mother purrs, and the wolves at her knees growl in response. Julian merely smiles. The sharp thread of tension snaps.
I don't know what you mean, Your Majesty,
he says, his voice blissfully normal. No haunting melody, no aura of power.
But Cal, if I can get to the Lakelander Queen, I could be of some use, he adds softly. Not for some part of the pageantry. It isn't an act to send a message. It's an actual proposition.
True pain crosses Cal's face. He turns, forgetting my parents.
That's a little more than suicide, Julian, he hisses. You won't even get close to her.
The old singer just raises an eyebrow.
And if I do, I could end this. Nothing will end.
Cal slices a hand in dismissal, and I swear I can almost hear the air singe. His eyes are wide, desperate, all masks of propriety sliding away.
You can't sing both Senra and Iris out of this war. Even if you manage to make them both drown themselves or turn their entire army around, they'll just come back. Another Signet waits in the Lakelands. It could buy us valuable time.
The uncle isn't wrong, but Cal won't hear of it.
And it will lose us a valuable person.
Julian lowers his eyes, stepping back.
Very well.
This is all very touching. I can't help but mutter. My dear brother mirrors my sentiment. I'm surprised his eyes don't roll out of his head. That aside, do we know what we're going to be facing out there? Our mother scoffs in reply. Like father, she thinks this battle is already hopeless, the city already lost.
Besides the full might of the Lakelands, red legions with all the silvers they can muster, not to mention powerful nymphs with a river to wield, and perhaps some might of Norda, too.
I tap a finger against my lip. I'm not the only one who thinks this. I can't be. It's too obvious. Judging by the flushes on the faces around me, the others realize what I'm saying, and they've had the same suspicions. The high houses missing from your coronation. None have come to pledge loyalty. None have responded to your commands. Cal's throat bobs. a silver blush blooms high on his cheeks.
Not while Maven lives. They still kneel to another king.
They knelt to another queen, I muse. His face falls, dark brows pulling together.
You think Iris has Norton's on her side?
I think she'd be stupid not to try. I shrug my shoulders, and Iris Signet is anything but stupid. The implication hangs over us, thick as a fog, and just as difficult to ignore. Even Father seems unsettled by the possibility of another split within the Norton kingdom, cleaving apart a land he one day hopes to control. Annabelle shifts, uneasy down to her toes. She runs a hand across the tight pull of her gray hair, smoothing down an already severe style. The old woman mutters under her breath.
I didn't think it was possible, but I think I miss those grubby reds.
A bit late for that,
Cal snarls, his voice like furious thunder. My father's lip twitches, the closest he's ever come to flinching. Of course, there are plans in place, tactics and strategies for defending the capital against an invasion. After a century of war with the Lakelanders, it would be foolish to think otherwise, but whatever the Kalor kings cooked up to fight the Signet nymphs relied on things that no longer exist. A Norton army at full strength, a country united, tech towns operating at full capacity, churning out electricity and ammunition. Cal can't count on any of it. The barracks and military facilities adjoining the square are the safest place outside the spiraling vaults of the treasury, but I don't fancy burying myself below ground with only a rickety train to rely on. My parents take up refuge in the nerve center of War Command, overseeing the many reports flooding in from the circling air fleet. I suspect King Volo enjoys standing in a place of such power, especially while Cal is readying himself to lead a battalion into the fray. I'm less inclined to stare at printouts and grainy footage, watching battle from afar. I'd rather trust my own eyes, and I can't be close to my parents right now. Somehow the approaching army, the ships hidden on a cloudy horizon, make my choices very clear. Ptolemus sits with me, perched on the steps of War Command. His armor ripples slightly, still taking shape across the planes of his muscles, trying to find the perfect fit. He inclines his head skyward, eyes roving over the gathering gray clouds overhead. They thicken with every passing minute. Ren is close by too, hovering at his shoulder, her hands bare and ready to heal.
It's going to rain, he says with a sniff. Any second now.
Ren looks past us, toward the bridge of Archeon on the far side of the square gates. Its many arches and supports seem faded as the oncoming mist bleeds into the city.
I wonder how high the river is now, she murmurs.
I reach out with my ability, trying to distinguish the armada rapidly closing the miles. But the ships are still too far out, or I'm too distracted. Father is going to run again. House Samos will run. Leave Norda to crumble with only the rift remaining, an island against the lapping Signet seat. Eventually we'll be overrun too. Queen Senra has no sons, no one to sell me to. Volo Samos has no more bargains left to make. He'll have to surrender, and die at her hands probably, the way Solon did. If he even survives today. So where does that leave me? If my father faces defeat as much as my betrothed does, I think it leaves me free. Tali, do you love me? Both Ren and my brother snap to attention, their faces whirling to mine. Ptolemus almost sputters, his lips flapping with surprise.
Of course,
he says, almost too quickly to be understood. His silver brows furrow, and something like anger crosses his features.
How can you even ask that?
Just the simple question offends him, wounds him. It would do the same to me. I take his hand, squeezing tight, feeling the bones in the newly grown appendage he lost some months ago. I sent Elaine away from the ridge. When you get home, she won't be there. Red hair, a mountain breeze, It seems like a dream. Could it be real? Is this my chance?
Eve, what are you talking about? Where?
I'm not going to tell you, so you won't have to lie. Slowly, I force myself to stand on oddly shaking limbs, a baby learning to walk, taking steps for the first time. I quiver all over, toes to fingertips. Ptolemus jumps up with me, bending so we're eye to eye, inches away from each other. His hands are tight on my shoulders, but not enough to keep me in place if I choose to move. I'm going inside. I need to ask him a question, I murmur, but I think I already know the answer.
Eve.
I look into his eyes, the same eyes as mine, as our father's. I would ask for his help, but splitting him apart like that, asking him to choose a side? I love my brother, and he loves me, but he loves our parents, too. He is a better heir than I ever was. Don't follow me. Still trembling, I pull him into a crushing hug. He returns the gesture reflexively, but he stumbles over his words, unable to understand what I'm saying. I don't look back for what could be my last glimpse of my brother's face. It's too difficult. He could die today, or tomorrow, or a month from now, when the Signet Queens storm my home to lay my family bare. I want to remember his smile, not a confused frown. War Command is a mess, a study in chaos. Silver officers buzz through passages and chambers, calling out developments and army movements. The Lakelander boats, the Piedmont air jets, it all passes in a blur. My parents are easy to find. My mother's wolves guard the door to one of the communications chambers, flanking each side with bright, keen eyes. The beasts turn to me in unison, neither hostile nor friendly as I pass. Static-filled screens fill the command room with a crackling glow of shifting light. Only a few are still operational. Not a good sign. The air fleet must be well into the storm, if it even still exists. Volo and Laurentia stand firm, mirror images of each other, postures violently straight, unblinking as they take in such dire circumstances. On one of the screens, the first Armada ship takes shape, a hulking shadow obscured by mist. Others slowly come into focus, at least a dozen, and still more. I've seen this room before, but never so empty. A skeleton crew of silver officers mans the screens and radios, trying to keep up with the flood of information. Runners bustle in and out, taking the newest items with them, probably to Cal, wherever he is now. Father? I sound like a child, and he dismisses me like one.
Evangeline, not now.
What happens when we go home? With a sneer, he looks over his shoulder. Father cut his hair shorter than usual, cropping the silver close to his scalp. It gives him a skullish look.
When this war is won.
I let him parrot the lie, feeling myself tighten as he spouts nonsense. You'll be queen, peace will reign, life will return to what it was. Lies. All of it. What happens to me? What plans do you have in store? I ask, remaining in the doorway. I'll have to be quick. Who will you make me become next? Both of them know what I'm asking, but neither can answer. Not with Norton officers close by, few as they may be. They must maintain the illusion of this alliance until the last second. If you're going to run, so will I murmur. The king of the rift clenches a fist, and the metal throughout the room responds in kind. A few screens crack, their casings twisted by his rage.
We're not going anywhere, Evangeline,
he lies. Mother tries another tactic, closing the distance between us. Her dark, angled eyes go wide and pleading, imitating a puppy or a cub. She puts a hand to my face, ever the image of the doting mother. We need you, she whispers. Our family needs you, your brother. I step out of her grasp, toward the hallway again, luring them both with me. Two rights, out the front, into the square. Let me go. Father's shoulders passed my mother, almost knocking her out of the way so he can stand over me. The chromium armor gleams harshly in the fluorescent light. He knows what I'm saying, what I'm really asking for.
I will not, he hisses. You are mine, Evangeline, my own daughter. You belong with us, you have a duty to us.
Another step backward. At the door, the wolves rise to their feet. I don't. Like a shadow, like a giant, Father moves with me, matching my steps.
What are you if not a Samos? He snarls. Nothing.
I knew this would be his answer, and the last thread, already thin and fraying, snaps apart. In spite of myself, tears bite at the corners of my eyes. If they fall, I don't know. I feel nothing but the burn of my own anger. You don't need me anymore. Not for power, not for greed. I spit back in his face, and you still won't let me go free. He blinks, and for a brief second the rage in him dissipates. The trick almost works. He's my father, and I can't help but love him, even though he treats me this way, even though he wants to use that love to keep me locked up, a prisoner to my own blood. I was raised to value family above all else, loyalty to your own. And that's who Elaine is. My family, my own. I'm done asking for your permission, I whisper, clenching a fist. The lights overhead rip free, smashing down, a crashing blow that takes even my father off guard. A rush of silver blood gushes from cuts on his head as he stumbles, dazed, but not dead, not even incapacitated. I can't find the stomach for that. I've never run so fast. Never sprinted like this in all my life, not even in battle, because I've never been so afraid. The wolves are faster than me. They snarl at my heels, trying to trip me. I strike at them with the metal on my arms, drawing armor into knives. One howls, whimpering when I cut a ruby-red wound across its belly. The other is stronger, bigger, leaping to knock me over. I try to dodge and end up falling flat on my back, with a wolf lunging for my throat. It lands hard, almost 200 pounds of muscle crashing into my chest. I gasp, feeling the air rush from my lungs. Teeth clamp around my neck, but they don't bite down. The points dig in, enough to bruise, enough to pin me in place. Overhead, all around, the lights quiver in their metal holdings, and hinges shutter on doors. I can't move. Can barely breathe. I made it 10 whole yards. Don't lift a finger, my mother crows, stepping into my very limited line of vision. Above me, the wolf trembles, yellow eyes boring into mine. My father shudders at her side, a storm cloud of rage. He keeps one hand to his head, stemming the flow of blood. His eyes are worse than the wolf's.
You stupid girl. He breathes. After all we've done for you, all we made you.
But for one flaw, my mother replies. She tisks, clucking her tongue over me, like I'm one of her prize animals, bred for her personal use. I suppose that's not incorrect. One deep, unnatural flaw. I try to gasp against the wolf's grip, if only to choke back a sob. My stomach coils and churns. Let me go, I want to beg. But he never will. He doesn't know how. And perhaps that's the fault of his own father, and his father before. I don't know why, but I think of Mayor Barrow, of her parents, holding her close, saying goodbye as we left Montfort. They are nothing, insignificant people, of no great beauty, intellect, or power. I envy them so deeply it makes me sick. Please, I manage to force out. The wolf holds firm. Father takes a step closer, his fingers painted in liquid silver. With a flick of his hand, he sprays me with his blood, with what I did.
I'll drag you back to the rift myself.
I don't doubt it. I stare up at him, struggling to breathe, fingers scrabbling over the floor. Even my own armor betrays me, melting off my body under his command, leaving me bare and without weapons, vulnerable, a prisoner still and always. Then my father flies away from me, crashing backward, his face pulled into unfamiliar surprise. He's being dragged by the chromium painted up and down his body. He slams into the nearest wall, head cracking backward. My mother screams as he slumps forward, eyes rolling in his skull. The wolf above me meets a different fate. A blade cuts through its neck, and the severed head flies, landing with a sick squelch a few feet away. A hot spray of fresh scarlet blood coats my face. I don't flinch. A familiar, cool hand closes around my wrist, giving me a tug.
"You trained us too well,"
Ptolemus says, helping me to my feet. We run together, and this time, I look back. Mother bends over father, her hands running over him. He tries to rise, but the blow makes him stagger. He's still alive.
"Goodbye, Evangeline,"
another man says. Julian Jacos steps out from an adjoining corridor, and Annabelle is with him, her fingers drumming together. She doesn't spare a glance for me as she approaches, hands raised. Such lethal power in so small a woman.
"Run away, Laurentia."
I fight the urge to cover my ears, even though Julian's melodic voice is not directed at me. Still, the singer's power shudders on the air, palpable as a sugary taste.
"Forget your children."
Her footsteps are quick and scurrying, like one of her spying rats.
"Laurentia,"
my father gurgles, barely able to speak in his dazed state. But he can certainly scream. I leave him to Annabelle and Julian, to whatever fate they have in store for the King of the Rift. Outside, the fog has truly fallen, coating the square in a gray haze too thick to be born of nature. Wren stands silhouetted, waiting for us, her trim form a sharp outline against the other shadows slouching into formation. Cal's forces, maybe even an entire legion, judging by the many shapes. At the sight of us, Wren waves a hand. "This way," she calls before turning to the fog and the soldiers. Something weighs at the edge of my perception, heavy enough to register even from a great distance. The Lakelander ships. They have to be. Overhead, unseen, jets scream back and forth. Somewhere missiles whine and bloom, spouting bursts of flame where the armada must be. I feel trapped by the fog, blinded. All I can do is focus on Wren and Ptolemus, staying close enough to their silhouettes as we barrel through the legions marching into place. A few soldiers stare as we pass, but none try to stop us. And soon, war command fades into the distance, swallowed by the fog. We angle across the square, making for the treasury. A strange, familiar feeling comes over me as I remember Maven's wedding. The square was a battleground then as well, and he fled for his train, his precious escape. I never liked the contraption, but I push aside any discomfort. It's the fastest way out, the safest. We'll be far beyond the city before the battle is even finished. And then, I don't have the time or energy to follow that thought. Rain follows the fog, slamming down with a sudden hiss. I'm soaked in seconds, and the deluge turns the square slick, forcing us to slow our pace or risk broken ankles. Down in the river, a boom like a drum sounds, rhythmic and shuddering. It shakes the ground beneath my feet. The ships are firing on the city. There are heavy rounds peppering both east and west Archeon. I reach for Ptolemus, my fingers sliding over his wet armor as I try to find some grip on him. The rest of me braces for the inevitable impact as the Lakelander fire reaches this part of the city. My instincts aren't wrong. The first missile howls over the square gates, barely visible as it arcs in and out of the fog cover. I don't see where it lands, but judging by the concussive blast behind us, I'd guess Whitefire just suffered a direct hit. The force knocks a few soldiers off their feet and sends us scrambling. Ptolemus and I ground ourselves in our armor, and Tali catches Ren before she falls, holding her tightly. "Keep moving," I shout over the shriek of another round, this one exploding somewhere near War Command. Someone else is shouting too, barking barely audible orders over the din. A streak of flame accompanies his voice, whirling through the fog near the head of the gathered legion. Whatever stirring speech Cal cooked up will be of little use now. It's too loud, too wet, and his soldiers are too distracted by the armada currently choking the river. Still, they begin to march, lurching forward to follow whatever his orders might be. Probably to line the cliffs, concentrate their attack on the river below. We're suddenly caught in their motion. The legion surges like a tide, carrying us with them. I tried to shove against the uniformed bodies, searching the silver faces for Ptolemus and Ren. Still close, but the distance between us is steadily growing. I feel for the copper in my brother's belt, holding on to the sensation of the metal. "Move," I snarl, trying to tear my way through the crowd, using my armor to propel me, using Ptolemus's as a beacon. "Move!" The next blow is closer, dead on target, dropping out of the sky like a hammer. A shell, not a missile. Smaller, unguided, but still deadly. In unison, separated though we are, Ptolemus and I raise our hands, throwing out our ability with a mighty burst of energy. I grab onto the steel casing, gritting my teeth against the strain of stopping a fast-moving projectile. But we manage, and with equal grunts, fling the shell back into the fog, spiraling off to hopefully explode somewhere in the Lakelander fleet. A few Telkies among Cal's legion do the same, banding together to throw back shells and missiles. But there are too many rounds rocketing out of the fog, almost on top of us before we even know it. The air fleet races among the clouds, still weaving through the sky, peppering the armada as best they can with all they can. They aren't the only jets up there. The Lakelanders have aerial battalions of their own, as does Piedmont in fewer numbers. Between the thunder of the ships and the scream of the jets, I can barely hear myself think. And the Norton guns only add to the chaotic din. The turrets up ahead spit sparks and hot iron, flashing with gunfire. They're usually disguised as part of the walls around the square, or supports to the bridge, but not now. A few Telkies stand at the turrets, using their abilities to fling explosives with deadly aim. This city was built to survive, and that's what it's trying to do. A wind picks up, probably born of our own windweavers. House Laris is still allied to Cal, and they use their ability to its full extent. A howling gale streaks over the square, blowing from somewhere behind us. It knocks some of the shells and missiles off course, and a few land harmlessly in the river while others spiral off into the fog. I squint against the slapping wind, keeping Ptolemus and Ren in sight. But the hurricane force makes the soldiers tighten their ranks, squashing us in with them. Gritting my teeth, I painstakingly shove my way through, slipping under arms, pressing past guns and torsos. Every step is an ordeal, made more difficult by the lashing wind, the rain, the press of the legion. The crowd tosses like the river below, now white-capped with rising waves. My hands close on Tali's wrist, his armor cold against my fingers. He heaves, pulling me to him over the last yard, until I'm tucked safely into his side. My brother holds Ren in the same manner, his arms braced across both our shoulders. What now? We have to get to the edge of the crowd, but the walls and buildings of the square keep the legion hemmed in, funneling all of us toward the bridge. Even from a distance, I can see Cal elevated above the rest, his red armor like blood against the howling storm. He stands to the side of the open gates, perched on a stone turret. Like some idiotic target. A good sniper could pick him off from 1,000 yards if they cared to try. But he risks it for the morale of his troops, shouting encouragement as they charge onto the bridge. More shells hurtle toward him, but he flicks a hand, exploding the rounds in midair before they can do any harm. On the bridge itself, silver soldiers disappear into the fog. I can guess their destination. Even now, the rhythmic, haunting drum of the Armada's guns breaks its pattern. I try not to picture Norton's soldiers fighting on the ship decks, facing the full might of Queen Senra's and Prince Bracken's forces.
"If we can get you two onto the ships," Cal's voice echoes in my head.
I grit my teeth against the curl of shame licking through me. I'm not wading into this battle, not on another river, not with them down there. This is our chance, and we have to take it. "Keep pushing," I shout, hoping Tali can hear me over the din. The treasury is behind us now, the distance growing with every passing step. It's suffocating, being shoved like this, prodded forward against my will. I don't have much armor left. My father stripped most of it away. But what little I have reforms along my arm, flattening into a round shield. Ptolemus mirrors my action, creating a smooth disc over his arm. We use them like battering rams, pushing against the human tide with our abilities and our own strength. It works slowly but steadily, creating enough space for us to move. Until red armor blocks our path, a fireball hovering over one hand. Cal stares between us, and I expect accusation. His flame gutters against the rain, refusing to surrender. His soldiers form a protective cocoon around him. Rainwater drips down his face, steaming on his exposed skin.
"How many are you taking with you?"
he says, barely audible. I blink water out of my eyes and gesture blankly at Ren and Ptolemus.
"Your father, Evangeline. How many will he manage to flee with?"
Cal takes a long step forward, never breaking eye contact.
"I need to know who I still have left."
Something releases in my chest. I shake my head, slow at first, then faster and faster. "I wouldn't know," I murmur. Cal's expression doesn't change, but for a moment I think the flame in his hand burns a bit brighter. Again, his gaze bounds between my brother and me, weighing us both. I let it wash over me like the rain and the fog and the rising smoke. Tiberius Calore is not my future anymore. Without another word, he stands aside, and his soldiers move with him, clearing a path over the slick tiles of the square. As I move past him, I feel a ghost of warmth bleeding from his hand as it hovers near my arm. I think he almost hugs me. Cal has always been an odd sort, different from other silvers, strange and soft in his inclinations, while the rest of us were raised to razors and hard edges. Instead of embracing him, I grab his arm just for a moment, pull him close enough for one last whisper, one last barb from Evangeline Samos before she disappears. Without her crown, without her house, without her colors, to become a new person entirely. If it isn't too late for me, it isn't too late for you. When we sit down on the train, its lights flickering, an engine lumbering to life, only then do I dimly wonder where the tracks end. It will be a long walk to Montfort.
33. Mare. I'm still not used to the purple hair. It isn't as garish as Ella's, at least. I only let Gisa dye the gray ends, leaving the roots untouched. I twist a spare lock around my finger, staring at the odd color as I walk. Strange as it looks, it gives me a small burst of pride. I'm an electrocon, And I'm not alone. After the first attack on Archeon, Maven and his loyal advisors took up a campaign of collapsing or flooding the immense tunnel system beneath the city. They concentrated heavily on the southern edges, where the tunnels were more numerous, all of them leading to the ruins of Naersea at the mouth of the capital river. Davidson originally suggested striking out from the abandoned city, but Farley and I knew better. Maven destroyed that too, rooting out the Scarlet Guard's stronghold while obliterating whatever remained. He was inspired by the Guard as well, constructing tunnels of his own in addition to an escape train. I can't be certain, not this deep, or after this long underground, but I think we'll link up with the train line eventually. My inner compass spins, searching for true north in vain. We have to rely on Guard intelligence, what they know of the tunnels, and we have to rely on Maven. Stupid as it is, he is our best hope for getting as far into the city as we can. The combined force of Montfort and the Scarlet Guard is too big to simply strike from the air, or the river, or the ground. We have to do all three. Of course, I'm stuck scrabbling in the darkness, walking for hours beneath several tons of rock and soil. Maven cuts a harsh silhouette, backlit by our lanterns. He's still wearing the simple uniform the Montfortans gave him when they locked him up. Washed out gray pants and shirt, the fabric too thin, and the cut too big on his frame. It makes him look younger than he is, more gaunt and drawn than ever before. I hang back, using Farley as a human shield between us. His own guards are close at hand as well, an even mix of reds and new bloods. None of them falter, hands resting on their holstered guns. Titan walks close by, never breaking his concentration on Maven. They're prepared for the first sign of trouble. So am I. My body buzzes, a live wire, not from my own electricity but from sheer nerves. I've felt it for hours, since Maven brought us down here, leading us through a service hatch a few miles north of the city limits. Our army lumbers along with us, thousands winding through the darkness, marching at an even steady pace that echoes off the tunnel walls. It sounds like a heartbeat, rhythmic and pulsing, vibrating in my ribcage. On my right, Killorn shuffles along, his steps a bit stilted to keep pace with mine. He notices me staring and pulls a tight smile. I try to return the gesture. He almost died in Newtown. I remember the feel of his blood spraying across my lips. The memory fills me with a numb fear. My old friend reads my face, even in the dim light. He nudges my arm. You have to admit, I have a talent for survival. Let's hope it holds, I mutter back. I'm just as concerned for Farley, in spite of all her skills and wiles. Not that I'd ever say it out loud. Farley has command of half the ground forces, all the Scarlet Guard soldiers, as well as the Red Norton defectors collected over the months of rebellion. Davidson leads the other half, though he is content to walk in line with the rest of us, letting her take precedence. Up ahead, the tunnel splits. One side narrows but angles sharply upward, the path scrambling over a few ancient steps, punctuated by gentle slopes of packed dirt. The other carries on like this one, wide and flat, with the slightest incline. Maven slows before the fork, resting both hands on his hips. He seems amused by the guards flanking him, all six of them moving in lockstep. Which way? Farley barks. Maven glances over at her, wearing a familiar smirk. The shadows cut deep along his cheekbones and make his blue eyes stand out, vivid in their icy coldness. He doesn't answer. She doesn't hesitate, striking him across the jaw. Silver blood spatters the tunnel floor, winking in the lantern light. At my side, I clench a fist. I would let Farley grind Maven into a pulp under any other circumstances, but we need him right now. Farley, I hiss, wishing I could call back the word as soon as I speak. She frowns at me, even as Maven grins, showing silvered teeth. Up, he says simply, pointing to the steeper way. I'm not the only one to curse under their breath. The narrower path isn't difficult, but it does slow us down. Maven seems to delight in the prospect, looking back with a haunting sneer every few minutes or so. We have to walk 3 abreast instead of 12 as before, making for a cramped descent. The tunnel quickly grows hot with the presence of so many bodies, all of them nervous and agitated. A bead of sweat rolls down my neck. I would prefer to storm the capital at full strength, but I guess this will have to do. Some of the steps are uneven and too high, forcing me to scramble. Killorn watches me go, almost laughing. I can call forth a lightning storm, but tall steps are apparently beyond me. The climb doesn't take longer than a half hour, but it feels like days spent in the dim light, scuffling in relative silence. Even Killorn keeps his mouth shut. The circumstances settle over the long train of soldiers like a cloud, sobering us all. What will we find when we finally reach the surface? I try not to look at Maven, but find myself focusing on the outline of his body. It's instinctual. I don't trust him in any capacity. I expect him to dart into a crevice, disappear, and escape. But he keeps an even pace, never faltering in his steps. The path flattens again, joining a wider tunnel with rounded walls and stone supports. The air is colder, sending a chill over my fevered skin.
"I think you know where we are,"
Maven says, his voice echoing down to me. With one hand, he gestures to the center of the tunnel floor. A pair of new tracks gleams, reflecting our lanterns. We've reached the escape train. I swallow hard, feeling a swell of fear rise in my throat. Not long now. Everyone else knows it too, judging by the thrum of activity rising through our ranks. From here, Farley's half of our forces can easily get up to Whitefire, Caesar's Square, and the cliffs that make up West Archeon. The rest, following Premier Davidson and General Swan, will cross under the river and link up with General Pallas, the last member of command still operating in the city. If all goes to plan, we'll be able to overrun both sides of Archeon before anyone knows we're here, and the Lakelanders will be caught in the middle. But will Cal fight with us? He has to, I tell myself. He has no other choice. The official objective is to keep the city out of Lakelander hands. We can do that, at the very least. We can do that. Next to me, Killorn brushes my arm, sensing my discomfort. The burst of warmth makes me shiver again. At the edge of my perception, something tinges. It hums and buzzes, the whine of distant electricity, not above us, strangely, but ahead and steadily approaching. "Something's coming," I bark aloud. Titan reacts in the same manner, his body tensing. "Stand back," he shouts, pushing Maven against the wall. The rest of us follow suit, moving quickly as the sound reaches us. An engine screeches far ahead, closing the distance as it gains speed over the tracks. The lights round a gentle curve, blinding in comparison to our lanterns, and I have to turn my head to shield my eyes. I end up looking at Maven, who doesn't flinch. He doesn't even blink. The familiar train speeds by in a blur of gray metal, too fast for us to glimpse who may be inside. Still, Maven searches the windows as they fly by, his blue eyes big as dinner plates. He pales, going whiter than Titan's hair, and his throat works furiously, lips pressing into a disappearing line. All this passes in an instant as he quickly wrestles his emotions under control, but the moment is enough for me. I know what fear looks like in Maven Kalor, and he is terrified now, for very good reason. Whatever plan he had, whatever hope there was for escape, just disappeared with that train. He catches me staring, reading the fading expression on his face. His jaw tightens just a little, and his eyes run over me, slow as a caress. "You can't run from what you've done," I want to say aloud. He gets the message. As the train fades to nothing again, beyond my perception, his eyes flutter shut. I think he's saying goodbye. Like the lights of the train, the spiraling white of the treasury vaults is blinding. Titan has Maven by the neck. He uses the leverage to increase our pace, forcing Maven to march faster and faster as we ascend the vault levels. The air fills with the sound of weapons and body armor being checked, guns loaded, blades drawn, buttons fastened, buckles clicked into place. The pistol on my own hip is still an unusual weight, and I lean a little to compensate. I doubt I'll fire a bullet up there. Not like Farley. She sheds her jacket, tossing it to the side to be trampled by the hundreds behind us. Without the red overcoat, I can see the many belts and holsters crossing her back and hips, slung with half a dozen different guns and corresponding ammunition, as well as her radio. She has her knives as well, now in plain sight. Diana Farley is ready for war. Somewhere behind us, one of the Scarlet Guard shouts, her voice echoing oddly. I can't decipher it, but others repeat her words. The cheer reverberates off the walls, the sound rising like thunder, until I realize what they're chanting. Rise, red as the dawn. In spite of my fear, I feel a wicked, wild grin rise to my lips. Rise, red as the dawn. The spiraling passage choruses with the battle cry. We're almost running, Maven struggling to keep up with Titan's pace. Farley matches his speed, her long strides eating up the white marble beneath our feet. Rise, red as the dawn! Killorn's voice joins the din. Rise, red as the dawn! The lights overhead flicker in time with my heartbeat. I look back, searching through the ranks of red and green, Scarlet Guard and Montfort. The range of faces, skin every shade, blood both colors, all speaking in shuddering unison. Some raise their fists, or weapons, or both, but no one is silent. Our voices are so loud, I can barely hear my own. Rise, red as the dawn! I call to lightning, call to thunder, call to all the strength left in my body. I'm not a general or commander. The only things I have to worry about topside are myself, Killorn, and Farley, if she'll let me. That's all I have the capacity for. And Cal, wherever he might be, leading his army, fighting in vain against a greater force, defending a city from almost inevitable ruin. Titan is first through the great doors of the treasury, vaulting out into the spiraling rain with Maven in tow. The younger prince skids, his shoes sliding over the wet tiles of Caesar's Square, but Titan keeps his grip. I follow, half expecting Titan to kill Maven on the spot, already shivering in the rain. We never planned on letting Maven survive the battle, and we don't need him anymore. Not really. It could be over right now. I feel tugged by both ends of the decision, as if it's really my decision to make. The other electrocon never loosens his grasp, almost holding Maven down. Titan isn't as temperamental as the rest of us. He is slow to fury, even now, with Maven in hand. He's a good jailer for someone the rest of us despise so much. Do it. I hear Maven grit out, head still bowed. He extends his white hands, and I watch his fingers tremble in the rain. Like me, he knows where this road leads. Behind us, more and more of Farley's forces flood into the square, still cheering the words of the Scarlet Guard. They fill the space with color, uniforms of red and green, standing out starkly, even in the wet fog. I focus on the fallen king, now shuddering 100 yards from his own palace. Even the rhythmic thud of gunfire and explosions barely penetrates my awareness. I said, do it, Maven snarls again, trying to goad Titan. Or me. Above us, the storm clouds churn. I feel the flash of lightning before it crackles across the sky, purple and white, an emblem of our presence. Let Cal know we're here. You don't have any more use for me. Rainwater drips down his face, tracing familiar paths. Be done with it! Slowly, he raises his eyes to mine. I expect sorrow or defeat, not icy anger. Ty, I start, but the word is hardly out of my mouth when a shell strikes true, exploding over the columned walls of the treasury. The force of it blows us sideways, falling over already slippery ground. My skull cracks against the tile, and I see dizzy stars for a second. I try to stand and fall again, colliding with an equally disoriented Titan. He holds me down, pushing me flat against the square as a leaping tongue of flame passes over us, singeing the air directly above our heads. Maven! I scream, my voice lost in the surge of battle. Against the guns, the missiles, the mortar shells, the wind and the rain, I might as well whisper. Beneath me, Titan tenses, pushing up on his elbows. His head whips back and forth, searching the crowd around us for a gray form and black hair. I roll to my knees, cursing, the twists of my hair already coming undone. Purple strands drift, unfamiliar. Killoran skids to a stop at my shoulder, his face already sweaty and flushed with exertion. "Is he gone?" he pants, trying to help me up. As my head clears, I manage to get my feet underneath me. My muscles tighten, ready to dodge another flaming blow. Not that I need to. That isn't his way. Maven isn't a warrior. He's gone. I hear myself hiss. I can choose to hunt him down, or I can make sure we finish what we've started. I can keep my friends alive. With a burst of determination, I force myself to turn, face the gates of the square and the bridge beyond. We have work to do. Though it's still shrouded in fog, I can just make out hundreds of soldiers spanning the bridge, with the looming hulks of Lakelander ships below. In the sky, air jets give chase, with wings of yellow, purple, red, blue, and green, swooping like deadly birds of prey. I can't make out anything beyond the river. The other half of the city is entirely obscured. At least Farley and the officers have their radios. They should be able to communicate with Davidson on the far side. Extending a hand, I take Titan by the wrist, hoisting him to his feet. His face darkens as he scowls, disgusted with himself. "I'm sorry," I think I hear him whisper. "I should have killed him when I had the chance." Spinning on my heel, I make for Farley. "Join the club," I mutter, sending another angry bolt across the sky. In the fog, flashes of blue and green pulse, as if in reply. "They made it across," Killoran muses, pointing out the distant lights. "Rafe and Ella, Davidson's army." In spite of Maven's escape, my lips twitch, wanting to smile. A small burst of triumph blooms in my chest. Well, that's something. More than something. Caesar's Square contains the center of Norton government, the palace, the courts, the treasury, and war command. But the bulk of the capital is on the other side of the river. Our side might be more valuable, but East Archaon is larger, with a greater population, red and silver. They won't be left to fend for themselves against the Lakelander assault while Cal's army concentrates on the Armada. Farley stares down the gullet of the bridge, standing tall and stoic, a statue against the soldiers moving around her. Her lieutenants bark orders, organizing their troops into predetermined formation. Half form a shield wall of bodies facing Whitefire in War Command, where some of Cal's own silvers could still be. The others face out, looking down the cliffs to the river or blocking this end of the bridge. Essentially, trapping Cal between this side of the water and the other, suspended over the Armada below. We reach her without delay, the Scarlet Guard and Montfort soldiers parting to let us pass. Titan is quick to get to work, hurling his blinding white darts of electricity at the ships below. The steel leviathans seem impenetrable, even for magnetrons. Blue rumbles in the clouds before one of Ella's storm bolts hits the prow of a battleship with the keening scream of tearing metal. I squint over the walls of the cliff edge, searching the river. It should be hundreds of feet below, but it seems closer than I remember. My mouth goes dry when I realize the Lakelanders must have raised the river to allow their largest ships to sail this far. "It's still rising," Farley says over her shoulder, making room for me on her perch. "We won't be able to escape the way we came." I bite my lip, thinking of the tunnels beneath us. "Flooded?" She nods. "More than likely." Her eyes waver, looking between the river and the silhouettes on the bridge. Smoke spirals with the fog, black against the white and gray. "We made it through, just in time." Killoran settles in next to us. His attention is on the bridge, not the water. From this vantage point, I can see that Cal's forces aren't defending the bridge, but striking from it. Through the fog, swifts blur along the decks of the boats below, alongside strong arms, Annabelle's oblivions, and other silvers best suited to close combat. Shivers of House Glyakon seem to be making the most headway. They use their abilities to freeze. One of the smaller battleships is completely iced in, frozen against the supports of the bridge. I sigh in relief when I don't see fire dancing among the ships. Nothing but the usual explosive blasts. Cal isn't down there fighting with the Armada himself. Yet. Do you think he knows we're here? Killorn wonders, still looking at the bridge. Farley clenches her jaw. She rests her hand at her side, not on her gun, but on the radio strapped high on her hip. Cal seems a bit preoccupied. He knows, I mutter, another peal of purple lightning streaking across the sky. The air is thick, like the clouds have come down to obscure the battle raging before us. I flinch as another round strikes the square, missiles crashing through a wing of the palace. I don't see Maven, Farley says, shifting closer to me. I find myself facing the full weight of her cerulean stare, clear and bright even in the haze. Is it done? I bite my lip, almost drawing blood. The sharp pain is better than shame. She reads my hesitation, and her face purples quicker than I thought possible. Mare Barrow! The crackle of the radio at her side cuts her off, saving me from her rage. She rips it free, snarling into the receiver. This is General Farley! The voice on the other end does not belong to a command general or a Montfort officer. It isn't Davidson either. I would know that voice anywhere, even punctuated by gunfire. I thought you weren't coming back, Cal says, sounding tinny and far away, distorted by static. The electricity in the air must not be very good for radio waves. Breathless, I look from Farley toward the bridge. Sure enough, one of the shadows in the fog seems to be solidifying. Broad shoulders and a familiar determined stride move closer and closer. I keep still, my feet rooted in place on our perch above the fray. Farley smirks down at her radio. So nice of you to make time for us. It's only polite, he replies. With a sigh, Farley angles herself toward the form on the bridge, now less than 50 yards away. Cal is surrounded by his guards, and he halts, stopping the group. The Silvers seem tense, their guns ready, waiting for an order. He acknowledges us with a tip of his head. Farley furrows her brow a little, hesitant. I'm guessing you know where things stand, Cal, she says. His response is almost too quick. I do. Farley bites her lip. And? A long rush of static drones before he speaks again. Mayor? The radio is in my hand before I can even think to ask for it. I'm here, I say, locking eyes with him across a canyon. Is it too late? The question has too many implications to count. Purple, white, green, and blue flash through the clouds, enough to penetrate the mist and blind us all for a moment. Shutting my eyes, I smile with the burst of energy as it thrums through me. When the lightning passes, I answer him and everything he means. No, it isn't, I tell him, before returning the radio to Farley. She doesn't stop me as I clamber down the steps, and Cal's guards stand aside when I approach, walking through the broken gates of the ruinous square. He waits at the edge of the Archeon Bridge, unmoving. As before, he lets me come to him. He lets me set the pace, choose the direction, make the decision. He puts it all in my hands. I keep an even step, in spite of the rumblings far below. Something smashes, wailing and roaring. One of the ships, maybe, colliding into another. I hardly notice. The embrace is short, far too short, but enough. I steady myself against him, holding tightly for as long as I dare, feeling the warm, hard lines of his body pressed against me. He smells like smoke and blood and sweat. His arms cross my back, holding me around the shoulders to pull me into his chest. I'm done with crowns, he murmurs to the top of my head. Finally, I whisper. We push back in unison, turning to the situation at hand. We don't have time for anything else, and I certainly don't have the capacity to think about much more. He raises the radio again, one hand still resting on my shoulder. General, I believe Volo Samos and some of his own soldiers are still in war command, he says. Through the mist, I glance at the hulking building on the edge of the square. You want to keep an eye on your backs. Got it. Will do, she answers. Anything else? She's on the move, barking orders to her lieutenants as she relays the advice. Killorn and Titan flank her like guards. We're working on blocking up the river. If the ships can't turn around, they can't escape. I finish for him, glancing out at the destruction on both sides of the city. Missiles spiral overhead, trailing smoke like black ink over paper as they arc and explode. In spite of Cal's soldiers, as well as the jets overhead, the Lakelander Armada doesn't seem to be taking much damage. As I watch, another one of Ella's stormbolts cracks, but a wave rises with blinding speed, taking the brunt of the blow to save a battleship. It lights up with the eerie glow of electricity before fading and falling harmlessly back into the river. It must be Queen Senra's doing, maybe with her daughter's help. I've never seen such a display of power, even from people who delight in that sort of thing. Cal watches with me, his face still and grim. We have to start sinking the ships, but with the river, they have all the shields they'll ever need. Right now, it's all we can do to minimize the damage to the city. He curses as a wave knocks back another volley of gunfire. They have to run out of ammunition eventually, right? He says dryly. I glare at the offending ships, eyes running over their steel hides. Call up some teleporters. Let's get Larilan Oblivions and Evangeline onto a ship. Have them tear some holes. Evangeline is gone. But you said her father. Somehow Cal looks oddly proud. She had an opportunity, and she took it. An opportunity to run and put all this behind her. I don't need much of an imagination to guess where she might be running, or who she's running with. Like Cal, I feel a strange mix of pride and surprise. The train, I say, almost smirking to myself. Well done. I can't help but think. He quirks an eyebrow. What? In the tunnels, we saw Maven's escape train on the move. It must have been her. I answer. It stings to say his name, and I grimace. A sour taste fills my mouth. He's here, by the way, I blurt out. The temperature around us rises a few degrees. Cal's lips drop open in shock. Maven? I nod. Heat flares up in my cheeks. He led us back into the city, to spite you. Still sputtering, Cal runs a hand over his face. Well, too bad I can't thank him, he finally mumbles, attempting a smirk. I don't laugh, unable to do much more than bite my lip. What's that look for? It's no use lying. He slipped us. He blinks at me. Another missile whines past. This is a very odd time for a very odd joke, Mare. I waver, dropping my gaze. I'm not joking. The flamemaker bracelet on his wrist sparks, and he turns the spark to a ball of flame. Angry, surprised, exasperated, he tosses the fiery orb over the edge of the bridge, letting it singe the fog as it fades. So he's somewhere in the city, he snaps. Fantastic. You keep an eye on Killorn and Farley. I'll find him, I say quickly, putting a hand to his arm. The plates of steel beneath my touch feel like they've been sitting in an oven. Cal brushes me away gently. He glances back toward the square again, teeth gritted. No, I will. I've always been faster than he is. I dodge his hands with ease, planting myself firmly between him and the square. Putting my palm on his chest, I hold him at arm's length. You're a little busy, I say, jerking my chin toward the armada below us. A little, he grinds out. I can finish this. I know you can. His armor warms beneath my hand, and he covers my fingers with his own. Then the bridge buckles beneath us as something slams into it, a dozen times from all angles, above, below, missiles, shells. A crashing wave sends spray up the supports and onto the level where we stand. Heavier in his armor, Cal loses his balance, falling flat while I fight to stay upright. Except there is no such thing as upright. The three-tiered bridge of Archeon, massive stone and steel, bows toward its center, drooping downward. It isn't difficult to guess why. Another explosion shudders, and a spray of debris plummets outward, falling with the central supports of the bridge. Cal scrambles, trying to get his feet, and I seize him beneath the arm. I would drag him if I could, but the armor is too heavy. Help! I shout, looking for his guards. The Lariland soldiers, his grandmother's own kin, waste no time dragging Cal to his feet. But the bridge fights us, falling faster and faster, roaring against its own demise. I scream when the pavement under our feet gives way, slamming into the next tier 30 feet below. I land hard on my side and something cracks in my ribs, sending spiderwebs of pain over me. Hissing, I try to roll and get my bearings. Get off the bridge, get off the bridge. Drums in my head. Cal is already on his knees, a hand outstretched, not to grab me, to stop me. Don't move, he screams. Fingers splayed. I freeze mid-step, my arm wrapped around my ribcage. His eyes stand out sharply, so afraid, his pupils blown wide and dark. Instead of the armada, their guns raining concussive hell upon us, I can only hear one thing. Like a whisper, but worse. Cracking. Crumbling. Cal! Everything collapses beneath us.
34. Cal. I fall like a stone. The useless, patronizing armor that never did anything but slow me down won't protect me from a 100-foot drop into raging water. It can't save me, and I can't save her. My hands claw through open air, reaching for anything to grab, but the fog just whistles through my fingers. I can't even shout. Debris tumbles with us, and I brace for the impact of solid concrete. Maybe it'll crush me before I get the chance to drown. What a small mercy that would be. I try to see her, even as the river rises up to meet me. Someone grabs me around my middle, arms squeezing so tightly the breath is crushed from my lungs. My vision spots. I might be passing out. Or not. I howl as the river and the fog and the crumbling bridge disappear, swallowed up by a blackness. My entire body tightens, tensing up, and when I hit something solid, I expect all my bones to shatter into dust. But nothing breaks. I didn't know kings could scream like that. My eyes fly open to see Killorn Warren standing over me, his face pale behind a friendly smile. He offers a hand, and I take it gladly, letting him pull me up. The Montfort teleporter looks on, panting slightly in her green uniform. She's small, almost as small as Mare, and gives me a curt nod. Thanks, I gasp, still trying to wrap my brain around surviving. She shrugs.
Just following orders, sir. Will we ever get used to that?
Mare says from a few feet away, still on her knees. She spits a little, looking green in the face. Her teleporter, the Montfort officer Arezzo, looks down at her with a smirk. Would you prefer the alternative? Mare just rolls her eyes. She glances at me and sticks out her hand, gesturing for help. Killorn takes one side, with me on the other, and we pull her to her feet. She pats dirt from her own uniform, the blood-red color of the Scarlet Guard, if only to do something for a moment. She's just as unsettled as I am, though she's loath to show it. I suppose you never get used to being plucked from the jaws of death, no matter how many times it happens.
How many fell?
She asks, still not looking up. I bite my lip and glance around, spotting a few Lariland guards recovering alongside us. But teleporters can only do so much, and I had hundreds of soldiers on the bridge, with even more below. My stomach churns with the implication. Gritting my teeth, I get my bearings and realize we're back at the edge of the square, embedded within Farley's troops now rapidly fortifying the cliff. Beyond, a skeleton of the Archeon Bridge remains, collapsed in the middle, with the river boiling below. One of the Lakelander ships is pinned, sinking beneath the weight of a bridge support that fell like a tree in a storm, crashing down on the steel hull. Too heavy, even for the Lakelander queens. Through the fog, I can't see the far end of the bridge, but I can only hope the bulk of my forces made it to one of the surviving edges. We didn't have much of an army to begin with, but every life lost is another weight on my shoulders. I feel as if the burden might crush me already, and this battle is far from over. Mare shifts to stand at my side, looking out as I do. Her fingers lace with mine for a second before she reluctantly pulls away.
"I need to find him,"
she whispers. As much as I want to help her in such an endeavor, I simply can't. Not unless I want to leave Nanabel in command, or, by my colors, Julian. Neither is equipped to defend Archaon properly, especially in conjunction with Diana Farley. "Go," I tell Mare, putting my hand on the small of her back. With a heavy sigh, I give her the slightest push. Toward my brother. To kill him. Be rid of him. I should be the one to do it. I should have the spine for that. But I can't bear it. I can't bear the weight of killing him. Not maybe. As she goes, Killorn tagging along with her, I shut my eyes and draw in a long, rattling breath. How many times do I have to say goodbye to him? How many times have I lost him? "The river!" someone barks. I snap to attention, letting instinct take hold. I trained for years to be a warrior and a general, to see battle inches in front of me and from miles away. Immediately, I try to picture the city in my head, split down the middle by the capital river, now choked with the Lakelander armada. We're cut off from the other side of Archaon, isolated here, with only teleporters for transport. How many, I don't know. But it certainly isn't enough if the Lakelanders decide to turn their attention on the cliffs and the people there. Farley still holds her perch, a long gun slung over one shoulder. She presses her eyes to a pair of binoculars, looking downward, unmoving. Like a statue, silhouetted by mist and smoke. "Is it still rising?" I ask, stepping up next to her for a better look. She passes me the binoculars without breaking her stare.
"And rising faster. Look downriver,"
she adds, jerking her thumb to the south. It isn't hard to spot what she means. Whitecaps approach, waves breaking in choppy motion as the Lakelanders pull in more and more water from the ocean. The river surges forward at a steady pace, solidifying into a wall of water like a single unbroken ripple 20 feet high. I'd bet the river here has risen at least 30 feet so far, and it's about to rise a lot more. In spite of the Scarlet Guard fortifications, the cliffs take a beating, pieces of rock shearing away as another volley of missiles hits home. I duck, raising an arm to block the debris as it sprays over us. Farley simply turns her head. "Julian's running the infirmary at the barracks with Sarah Skonos. Better get some runners ready," I instruct, watching as a few soldiers turn away from the cliffs, their faces bloody.
"And Annabelle?"
she replies. Her tone is forcibly neutral. "War command."
"With Samos."
I hesitate, thinking about what Evangeline told me before my coronation. That Julian and Annabelle were scheming to kill him. Remove the rift from the equation, and maybe buy us some peace with his corpse. If that's the price, I won't stop her. Perhaps is all I can manage before I try to change the subject. "What's your plan?" I ask her. I've never known Diana Farley to strike without some kind of idea, maybe even an outright trick up her sleeve. Especially not with someone like Davidson backing her, not to mention the entire Scarlet Guard. "You've got one, right?"
"We might,"
she replies.
"And you?"
"We were trying to clog up the armada, trap them maybe, force a ceasefire, but those nymph queens are unbeatable on the water."
"Are they?"
Farley narrows her eyes at me.
I think that Iris gave you a good scare back in Harbor Bay.
I try not to think about it. The crushing weight of water pulling me down faster than I thought possible. Perhaps.
Well then, we should return the favor.
Fine. I'll take some oblivions, some teleporters, see if we can... To my surprise, she waves me off. I flush, taken aback by her dismissal.
There's no need for that,
Farley says, turning away from me. She raises her radio and twists the knob to some corresponding channel.
Premier, how's your side of things?
Davidson's voice filters back in reply, and I hear echoes of gunfire on his end. Holding steady for now. Some Piedmontese tried the cliffs, but they didn't expect to run into us. Send them back. I imagine Piedmont soldiers in purple and gold falling from the bank, split apart by new blood troops. What about your end, General? Davidson presses. Farley grins.
I've got the more reasonable Kalor with me here, and Barrow is going after the other one.
Premier, I say into the radio. I have a few hundred silvers of my own spread between the bridge ruins and still fighting down on the ships. Can you give them cover? I can do you one better. They need to get off the water, and I'll send my teleporters in now, he replies.
Mine as well,
Farley clips back.
Grab as many as we can before things really heat up.
I glance at her, brow furrowed. Another wave of ships? Her smile spreads.
Something like that.
Now isn't really the time for surprises.
Honestly, it's like you've forgotten what we're capable of,
she chuckles. It's an odd sight to see her laughing against the backdrop of war and destruction.
We had to wait until the water was high enough, and luckily for us, those nymph queens were happy to oblige.
I look at the water again, along with the surge now breaking against the ships, raising their hulls until they're level with the lower cliffs. A few more surges, and we'll be staring right into their teeth, with every missile and shell pointed our way. Somehow, I don't see how that's a desirable position to be in. Farley looks amused by my confusion.
I'm glad you decided to see things our way, Cal.
The right way, I reply. The way it should be. Her smile fades, but not in displeasure. Surprise, maybe. For the first time, her touch is gentle, driven by compassion. Her finger grazes my shoulder.
No more kings, Kalor.
No more kings, I echo. Instead of Farley, the missiles, the ships, the water, the scream of wounded soldiers, I hear my mother's voice. The voice I think she had.
Cal will not be like the others.
She wanted a certain path for me, just like my father. She wanted me to be different, but she still wanted me to be a king. I hope my choice would make her proud.
Speaking of kings,
Farley mutters, her demeanor changes in an instant. She straightens and points at a figure crossing the square.
Is that...
His black cape flutters in the fog, snapping back to reveal limbs coated in perfect, mirrored armor. His steps are sure and quick as he moves through the crowd, soldiers jumping out of his way to let him pass. Without breaking pace, he steps onto the crumbling bridge. Volo Samos, I breathe, gritting my teeth. Whatever he's about to do won't end well for us. But he doesn't slow, even as the bridge beneath him becomes more and more precarious. The ships, rising on the forced tide, are almost directly beneath him. And still he doesn't stop. Not even at the edge. Farley gasps when he plummets, his body falling slowly, his cape and armor unmistakable through a gap in the fog. I turn away, unable to watch him break himself on the steel below. Across the square, I spy my grandmother, standing resolute, her battle uniform aglow in red and orange. She stares at me through the fray of soldiers. At her side, Julian hangs his head. I don't think he's ever killed someone before.
35. Iris. Another tidal pull and we can offload directly from the ships, Mother mutters, stepping out of the ship's bridge to stand in the open air. Rain pelts down, beating on her exposed face. I follow her closely, as do her guards. She's armored to the throat, swathed in black and cobalt blue plate. We won't take any chances. A stray bullet could catch her at any moment and bring our invasion crashing down around our ears. Be patient, Mother, I murmur, almost glued to her side. They won't be able to hold us off for much longer. I can't help but hope. Tiberius Calor crippled his country so perfectly, betraying his own people as well as the Reds, casting aside any chance he had to keep the throne he won from his wretched brother. Archaon will fall, and fall soon. I glance up at the cliffs on either side of the river, both edges wreathed in smoke and mist. Lightning streaks across the sky, oddly colored, and I'm reminded of my own wedding. The freak Reds and blood traders of the mountains attacked the city that day, albeit with less success than we are having. The waters of the river thrum around us, caressing the hulls of our armada. I feel it keenly, every curve of the waves, as far as my ability can reach. The broken Archaon Bridge juts out above us, still crumbling. Debris splashes into the river harmlessly. I raise a hand, batting away a particularly large chunk of concrete with a rising swell of water. Another tumbles after it, falling oddly. It flashes, metallic as it turns, end over end, hurtling right for the deck of the ship. My fingers brush against the air, raising another wave, but my mother grabs my wrist. Let him fall, she says, her eyes locked on the figure. I don't realize it's a body until it lands on the deck a few yards in front of us, limbs mangled and skulls split open like a melon, spewing silver and white across the deck. His mirrored armor shatters like his bones, some of it splintering into dust at the impact. The wrecked corpse is a tall man, older, judging by the remains of a beard beneath his crumpled face. A fold of his black cape splays over the rest of his body. The fabric is edged in silver. Familiar colors. Suddenly the battle seems far away, distant as a dream, and the world at the edge of my vision goes hazy. Everything narrows to this man, destroyed in front of us. No crown on his brow. He doesn't even have a face anymore. So ends Volos Amos and the Kingdom of the Rift, Mother says, stepping neatly to stand over his broken bones. She tows aside his cape and turns the ruined remains of his skull without flinching. I glance away, unable to look. My stomach flips queasily. Queen Annabelle's trade is complete. Still examining the corpse, Mother tuts loudly. Her dark eyes run over the dead king, drinking him in. She thinks this will save her city and her grandson. Stealing myself, I force my gaze back to Samos. I'm no stranger to blood. Another corpse shouldn't frighten me. This man is the reason my father is dead, and our country is without its king, my mother without her husband. He deserves every inch of this ending, and what a brutal ending it was. Foolish woman, I seethe, my thoughts turning to Annabelle Larrelan and her weak attempt to stop an invasion. You will not succeed. The price is already paid. Satisfied, Mother steps back over the body. She gestures with one hand, and two of our guards begin the gruesome process of removing Samos from the deck. Silver blood streaks like paint as they drag him away. We're all fools for the people we love, dear, Mother says airily, clasping her hands in front of her. Without breaking stride, she glances at one of our lieutenants. Even concentration on both sides of the city, focused on the massing troops. With a nod, the officer ducks back into the command bridge, and her orders are relayed across the armada. both Lakelander and Piedmontese ships respond in kind, their guns erupting with a volley of fire. Explosions and smoke crackle along the riverbanks, shearing off cliff rock as well as city structures. After a moment, our enemies on both sides return fire, but weakly. Most bullets ping off steel or sink in the water. Mother watches with a grim smile. Break their lines and we'll have an easy way of it, once the river is high enough. She's thinking about the thousands of soldiers below decks, waiting to spring from our ships and overrun whoever waits above. A harsh wind blows up, carrying with it the sound of jets screaming far overhead. I grit my teeth. The Norden Air Fleet is their only measure of superiority, with Piedmont's fleet diminished, and our own sorely lacking in comparison. All we can do is hold them at bay with the storm, using our own meager jets to distract them from the Armada. It seems to be working, for now at least. As for the Norden soldiers Tiberius foolishly sent down among us, the deck troops aren't having a difficult time holding them off. Even with strong arms and swifts leading the charge, the many nymphs of House Osanos use the river to their advantage, our advantage. Even now, I can see their numbers dwindling. Teleporters, I snarl, watching as the Montfort oddities blink in and out of existence. They snatch away the last of the Nortons, returning them to the relative safety of the city cliffs. They're retreating from the ships. I turn to Mother, torn between pride and disappointment. The Nortons fear us enough to run. What's left of them, at least? The Queen of the Lakelands raises her chin, looking imperious and regal. We're calling to make a last stand. Good. I'm quickly struck by the image of my mother striding boldly through Caesar's Square, up the steps of the palace that was once my glorified prison, to sit the throne the Kalors have finally lost. Will my mother be an empress when all this is done? Master of all between the lakes and the sea, from the frozen tundra to the radiated borders of the Wash. Don't get ahead of yourself, Iris. The battle is not yet won. I try to center myself in the moment. The sharp tang of smoke and Samos's blood is a good anchor. I inhale sharply, letting the smell overwhelm my senses. It's funny. I expected this anger inside me to waste away and die with the Samos king, but I still feel it deep in my chest, gnawing at my heart. My father is dead, and no throne, no crown can bring him back. No amount of vengeance paid can push away this pain. I draw another breath, focusing on the waters below us. The envoy of our gods, it carries every blessing and curse. Normally the sensation would calm me down. Being so close to such power has a way of humbling even me. Right now, I sense no gods that I recognize. But I do sense something. Do you feel that? I whirl to my mother. The armor all over my body seems to tighten, threatening to smother me as every one of my nerve endings lights up with fear. What is that? That thing in the water? Mother blinks at me, reading my unease. Her eyes glaze for a moment as she reaches out with her own considerable ability, hunting through the waves for what has me so on edge. I watch, breathless, waiting for her to tell me it's nothing. My imagination, confusion, a mistake. She sharpens, her eyes narrowing to slits, and the rain suddenly feels like icicles down my spine. Another current? She hisses, snapping her fingers at one of the officers nearby. A Norden betrayer, he is quick to oblige, his face drawn and pale. He still seems uncomfortable in the blue uniform of the Lakelands. Osanos, she barks at him. Are your nymphs pulling another tide? He shakes, bowing low. Osanos and his extended family aren't as talented as us, but they're formidable in their own right, not to mention integral to our efforts.
Not by my orders, Your Majesty.
I bite my lip, my sensation still edging around the gargantuan thing moving through the water. I try to push it off course, but the object is just too heavy. A whale? I mutter, hardly believing my own suggestion. Mother shakes her head, teeth on edge.
Bigger, heavier, she says, and more than one.
Behind us, the ship officers scramble in the command bridge, reacting to a sudden dozen blinking lights and alarms. The sound hits me like knives.
"Brace for impact!"
one of them shouts, gesturing for us to take cover. Mother grabs me, her arms sliding around my waist to hold me close. We watch in horror, feeling the currents below us as the many somethings move through the armada. They must be mechanical, weapons of war we have no knowledge of. The first strike comes in the middle of the fleet, a battleship suddenly leaning with a groan of tearing metal. An explosion erupts below the waterline, blowing out in an arc of foam and shrapnel. A Piedmont ship catches fire, its powder magazine obliterating the front half of the hull. The blast of heat feels like a burn, but I can't turn away, watching in horrified awe as the ship sinks in less than a minute, drowning gods know how many within its belly. Our flagship shudders under us, clanking as something rams the hull beneath the surface.
"Push, Iris, push!"
Mother commands, letting go of me to rush to the edge of the deck. She leans forward, arms outstretched, and the waters below obey her will, rushing backward in waves. I join her, letting my ability take hold. I press and push, trying to dislodge whatever is ramming the ship. But it's so heavy, so big, with an engine of its own. We're so focused on protecting the flagship, I hardly notice the rest of the armada floundering all around us. Without orders, a few of the ships painstakingly try to turn, navigating the foaming river among the growing steel hulks bobbing and sinking. Sweat breaks out across my brow, joining with the hurtling rain, and I taste salt on my lips. It stings, forcing me to blink and lose focus.
"Mother!"
I force out. She doesn't answer, her hands clawed into the mist as if she can lift the new weaponry directly out of the water. She snarls a little, the sound lost in the howling wind. Lightning flashes again, another blue bolt striking down. I'm not fast enough to deflect it, and it hits home on the ship next to us, striking the deck with the sizzle of water and flesh. Soldiers scream, leaping off the ship entirely to escape the glowing hell of electrocution. They're quickly swallowed by the churning waters.
"Mother!"
I say again, shouting this time. She curses through gritted teeth.
"Those red bastards have boats below the water, boats and weapons.
We can't stop them, can we?"
Her eyes shine, bright even against the storm and the sudden shift in our fortunes. Without warning, she drops her hands.
"Not without great loss, and not with any guarantees,"
she murmurs as if dazed. I try to shake her out of it.
"We have to get up to the cliffs, get on land. We can still overwhelm their forces."
Behind us, our guards close in, tense and ready to spring, waiting for my mother's command. She ignores them, staring at me instead.
"Can we?"
she says, her voice oddly soft and detached. It's like she's been sleeping, and now she is awake. Mother pats me on the cheek, her touch cold and wet. She looks past me, fixing on the deck. I turn to follow her gaze, only to see the last of Samos's blood darkening against the steel. The last piece of our revenge. Even the rain can't wash it away. Even the gods can't heal this pain. I flinch as another ship succumbs to attack, keeling over into the river.
"Is this finally ended?"
I wonder aloud. Her fingers lace with mine.
"Ended?"
she breathes, squeezing my hand.
"Never, not truly. But for now, I'm getting my daughter out of here alive."
For the first time today, I look backward, downriver, toward retreat. I swallow hard, dazed by the sudden turn in the battle. It feels like being cut open. But there is only one choice between death and defeat. Let's go home.
36. Maven. After so many days in captivity, smothered by silent stone and separated from my bracelets, the burst of flame is more quenching than water to a thirsty man. I let it lick up inside me, trailing like a lover's kiss, and explode along my skin, powerful and furious enough to throw back that wretched electricon. He falls, and Mare falls too, both of them slamming backward onto the hard tile of Caesar's Square. I don't spare a glance for her as I run, leaving fire in my wake, a wall to defend my escape. I keep another burst of flame close, coiling in my fist, using all my energy to keep it burning. My feet carry me over the square, and I sprint like never before. I'm not Cal, I'm not particularly fast or strong, but fear keeps me alert and daring. The chaos of Archeon works to my advantage, not to mention my intimate knowledge of the palace. White fire was my home, and I have not forgotten it. The sudden arrival of hundreds of Scarlet Guard soldiers is more than enough to distract Cal's troops, still trying to organize themselves against the Lakelander assault. Nevertheless, I keep my head down, black hair falling forward to obscure my all-too-recognizable face. These soldiers were mine, should still be mine. The voice in my head shifts from my own to hers. "Fools, all of them!" my mother sneers. I can almost feel her hands ghosting along my shoulders, keeping me upright as I run. "Replacing you with that wretched spineless boy. He will be the end of a dynasty, the end of an age." She isn't wrong. She was never truly wrong. If only Father could see you now, Cal. See what you've become and what you've done to his kingdom. Of all my many wishes and regrets, that one cuts deepest. My father is dead, but he died loving Cal, trusting Cal, believing in Cal's greatness and perfection. I wonder if I should have let things run their course. If somehow I could have simply made him see how flawed the perfect son was. But Mother had her reasons. She knew best. And that is simply another path untaken. A dead future, as John would say. Another missile explodes nearby, and as before, I use the resulting explosion to my advantage. It breaks around me, harmless, allowing me to escape through a bloom of smoke and fire. I can't return to the treasury tunnels, not with those red rats still crawling around. But there are other ways down to the tracks, other ways to get out of Archeon undetected. The ways I know best are in Whitefire itself, and I beat a path to the palace as quickly as I can. That damn train. I curse whoever stole it. Whatever sniveling weasel is now riding along, safe and sound. At least I can still walk the track. I'm well accustomed to darkness by now. What's a few more miles? Nothing at all. I've always felt darkness all over me. Stubborn as a stain. It follows wherever I go. And where will I go? Where can I go? I'm a fallen king, a murderer, a betrayer, a monster to anyone with eyes and a modicum of sense. They'll kill me in the Lakelands, in Montfort, in my own country. I deserve it, I think, as I run. I should be dead 1,000 times, executed in 100 different ways. Each one more painful than the last. I think of Mare behind me, sprawled across the tiles of the square, picking herself up again, ready to give chase. My brother, too, leading some stupidly valiant effort to defend the city and his ill-gotten throne. I scoff at the thought as I vault up the steps of Whitefire, flying over familiar stone. The flame in my palm gutters, reducing to a flicker before I push it back to life, letting it envelop my hand. The interior is just as empty as the square is full. Whatever nobles and courtiers aren't out fighting must be deep within the palace, barricaded in their rooms, or perhaps they've fled too. Either way, my footsteps are the only sound as I cross the entrance hall, my path familiar as my own heartbeat. Even though it's midday, the halls are dark and cold, with the windows clouded by fog and smoke. Electricity flickers as the power grid reacts to the battle outside, turning the lights on and off in patternless bursts. Good, I think. In my gray clothing, I can blend into the shadows of Whitefire. I used to do it as a boy, hide in alcoves or behind curtains, spying and listening, not for my mother then, but for my own curiosity. Cal used to spy with me when he had the time, or cover for me at lessons, telling tutors I was sick or otherwise detained. Odd that I can remember all that, but that the emotion behind it, the connection we must have had, is almost entirely gone, severed or surgically removed by my mother, and no one can ever make it grow back. Even though he tried, he searched, he wanted to save you. The thought almost makes me vomit, and I push it away. The doors of the throne room are heavier than I expected. Funny to think I've never opened them myself. There's always been a guard or a sentinel, usually a Telki. I feel weak as I drive my shoulder into one, pushing it ajar enough to slip through. My throne is gone, the Silent Stone dragged away to only Cal knows where. Our father's seat is returned, the inferno carved from diamond glass. I sneer at the sparkling monstrosity, a symbol of our father, his crown, and everything he lacked. Our chairs flank Cal's throne, one for Julian Jacos and one for our grandmother. The thought of both makes my lip curl. Without them, Cal would never have made it this far, and that snake Iris would have never handed me over. I hope she drowns on the river, suffocated by her own ability. No, better yet, I hope she burns. Isn't that the punishment of her gods, to suffer forever beneath an opposing element? Maybe Iris and Cal will manage to kill each other. They came so close last time. A boy can certainly hope. The door to the left of the throne is smaller, leading to the king's private rooms, including a study, meeting areas, and the council chamber. As I step into the long room lined with shelving, the lights switch off again, plunging me into semi-darkness. The windows in here are tall, looking out on a gray, empty courtyard. I pass them quickly, counting. 1, 2, 3. After the fourth window, I stop and count shelves. 3 up. Thankfully, Cal hasn't had time to rearrange the books in here, or else he would have discovered the mechanism attached to a leather-bound tome regarding economic fluctuations during the last decade. It glides forward with the lightest pull, activating rotating gears behind the lacquered wood. The entire shelf swings forward, revealing a narrow stairwell cut into the exterior wall. Using my still-burning flame as a torch, I plunge downward, letting the shelf swing into place behind me. The darkness is thick with damp and the air is stale. I suck it down anyway, careful on the steps as I descend. This is an old servant's stair, long out of use, but it still connects to the other passages beneath the palace. From there I can get to the treasury, war command, the courts, or any other place of value around Caesar's Square. My ancestors built these passages for use during war and siege. I'm glad for their foresight, as well as my own. The steps empty out into a wider hall lined with rough stone, the floor beneath sloping at a gentle decline. I plod along, daring to breathe a bit deeper and slower. There's a battle raging above my head, but I'm long gone. The only people who know about these tunnels are otherwise preoccupied. I might actually survive this. Then something flickers ahead, a reflection of fire, but distorted somehow, rippling. I slow my pace, shuffling my feet to muffle the sound of my steps. Another deep breath, and I smell water. Those fucking Lakelanders. The path ahead of me slopes into black water, its surface reflecting my flaming hand. I feel like punching a wall. Instead, I curse against gritted teeth. In spite of the wet, I take a few steps forward until the water laps over my ankles, chilling me to the bone. It only gets deeper. Furious, I trudge back out, kicking at the dirt floor. A few bits skitter, plopping into the inscrutable flood. I bite back another curse in turn, hurrying back the way I came. My body burns with frustration, and heat spreads over my cheeks. Another stair, another tunnel, I tell myself, even though I know exactly where that will lead. Another flooded passage, another barred escape. The walls suddenly feel too close, pressing down from every side. I quicken my pace, the fire in my hand waning as I begin to stumble. My fingers graze the stone within reach, brushing over the uneven surface as I reach the steps again. I'm almost sprinting when I reach the top and spill out again into the fresh air of the adjoining chamber. If I can't get into the tunnels, I'll have to go over the walls. Somehow get up and down, and head west, avoiding the slums upriver, the vast estates ringing the land around the capital. I'll need to disguise my face somehow. Instead of focusing, my mind spirals out, paralyzed by fear. I need to stay on the task at hand, get out of the city, but everything blurs. I need food, a map, supplies. Every step above ground is a step toward danger. They'll hunt me down and kill me, Mare and my brother, if they manage to survive. I raid the study first, searching in vain for anything that might be of use. Bracelets, especially. Flame makers. Cal might keep a spare somewhere, but there's nothing in the many drawers and compartments of the fine desk that was once mine. I contemplate a particularly sharp letter opener for a moment, holding the dagger-like piece of metal up to a ray of weak light. With a swipe of my hand, I draw a slice across a painting of my father. Even mangled, his face still taunts me, eyes burning from the ripped canvas. I tighten my grip on the letter opener as I turn away, unable to face his stare for very long. The royal bedchamber is next. I blink and I'm there, nearly kicking the doors off their hinges. But I stop short, perplexed. Instead of a luxurious suite fit only for the King of Norta, I find empty rooms stripped of furnishings and even paint. No curtains, no rugs. Nothing but a haphazard collection of cleaning supplies. Cal isn't sleeping here, not while bits of me still linger. Coward. This time I really do punch a wall, leaving my knuckles raw and smarting. I have no way of knowing which room might be his. The residence wings are home to dozens of bedrooms, and I hardly have time to search them all. I'll have to settle for stealing what I can outside the city. Flint and steel make sparks as easily as any bracelet. I can acquire that. Somehow. My vision blurs at the edges, an odd haze that pulses in time with my rapidly increasing heartbeat. I shake my head, trying to make the sensation dissipate, but it stays put. A pain springs up in my skull, digging into the bone. I suck down another breath, forcing myself to take big gasps of air in an attempt to calm down. As in the tunnel, the walls feel too close and like they're getting closer by the second. I wonder if the windows are about to shatter all over me, cutting my flesh to ribbons. I trip on the stairs as I make my way back down to the throne room. "No choice, Maven," Mother croons to me as I slip in again. That's all I get. She was never one to advise retreat or surrender. Elara Mirandis gave no ground in life, and she instilled the same instinct in me. My headache spreads, arcing across my skull in a web of sharp pain. Above me, the lights kick on again, so brightly they whine in their bulbs. The electricity surge is too strong. One by one, they pop, raining smashed glass along the polished floor behind me. I manage to dodge as the bulb directly above me shrieks apart. The filaments continue to burn, sparking white and purple. Stoic, calm, and deadly, Mare Barrow stands firm, silhouetted in the narrow opening. Without blinking, she slides through and shuts the door behind her, locking us both in, together. "It's over, Maven," she whispers. This time I sprint for the other side of the throne and burst into another set of rooms usually reserved for the queen. I made my own modifications to them, modifications that would disagree with most. Mare is faster than I am, but she follows at a languid pace, haunting me, teasing me. She could run me down at any second, electrocute me with one well-aimed bolt of lightning. Good, I think. Keep on coming, Barrow. I feel the telltale twinge up ahead, the empty ache that plagues all silvers and new bloods. One more door to push open, one last chance to survive where so many others would die. I will not fail, Mother. Grinning, I turn around, letting her watch me as I back farther into the dark chamber. The single window is small, and a weak light fills the space, illuminating the dark walls patterned like a checkerboard of gray and black. The gray bits gleam dully, showing ribbons of liquid silver. Arvin blood. Silence blood. She hesitates at the threshold, feeling the press of silent stone. I watch it ruin her. The color drains from her face, and she almost looks silver in the cold gray light. I keep walking back and back, to the next door, the next passage, my chance. She doesn't stop me. Her throat bobs as she swallows around the fear clawing at her. I gave her this wound. I locked her away in chains, drained her ability, made her live like a wasting ghost. If she steps forward, she'll have no weapons at all, no shield, no guarantee. The letter opener in my hand feels suddenly heavy. I could drop it, leave the blade and run. I could let her live, or I could kill her. The choice is easy, and so very difficult. I hold my ground. My grip tightens on the iron.
37. Mare. The room is a coffin, a maw of stone that will swallow me whole. I feel dead, even on the threshold, hesitating to fully succumb to this place and the person who built it. My heart pounds so loudly, I know Maven can hear it. His eyes trace over me in a way that is too familiar and too close, despite the yards between us. He focuses on my throat, on the vein pulsing with all my fear. I expect him to lick his lips. My hand flexes in vain, attempting to call up a bolt of lightning. All I get are weak sparks, darkly purple, dying quickly against the might of so much silent stone. Something gleams in his hand, flashing in the dim light. A knife, I think. Thin and small, but sharp enough. My hand strays to my hip, for the pistol Titan harangued me into wearing. But the holster is gone entirely, probably lost in the bridge collapse. I gulp again. I have no weapons at all. And Maven knows it. He grins, teeth white and wicked. "Aren't you going to try to stop me?" he says, tipping his head like some curious puppy. My mouth feels dry when I speak. "Don't make me do this, Maven." It comes out raspy. Maven just shrugs. Somehow he manages to make his simple gray clothing look like silk and fur and steel. He isn't a king anymore, but no one seems to have told him. "I'm not making you do anything," he says imperiously. "You don't have to suffer this. You can stand right there, or even turn around. It makes no difference to me." I force another breath, stronger than before. The too familiar memory of Silent Stone claws up my spine. "Don't make me kill you like this," I growl, sounding dangerous and lethal. "What are you going to do? Stare at me?" he shoots back dryly. "I'm terrified." It's a brash show, his forced nonchalance. I know Maven well enough to see the truth in his words, the real fear weaving through his practiced arrogance. His eyes dart quicker than before, not over my face, but my feet, so he can move when I move, run when I lunge. In spite of the dagger, he's without his weapons, too. I don't tremble when I take the first slow step, sliding into the prison of Silent Stone. You should be. Maven stumbles back, surprised, almost tripping over himself. But he recovers quickly, the dagger tight in his hand as I continue forward. He mirrors my movements, stepping backward. The lethal dance is achingly slow, and we never break our stare. We don't even blink. I feel as if I'm walking a tightrope over a pit of wolves, barely keeping balance. One wrong move, and I'll fall to their fangs. Or maybe I'm the wolf. I can see myself in his eyes, and his mother, and Cal. All we did to get here, in the middle of the end of his world. I lied, and was lied to. Betrayed, and was betrayed. I hurt people, and so many people hurt me. I wonder what Maven sees in my eyes. It won't end here, he murmurs, his voice low and smooth. I'm reminded of Julian and his melodic ability. You can drag my corpse across the world, and it won't end any of this. Likewise, I reply, showing my teeth. The inches close between us, in spite of his best efforts. I'm more agile than he is. The Red Dawn won't stop with me. He offers a twisting smirk. Then it seems we're both dispensable. We don't matter anymore. I bark out a laugh. I've never mattered the way he still does. I'm used to it. I like the hair, Maven murmurs, filling the empty space. His eyes run over the tangle of brown and purple, spilling over one shoulder. I don't reply. The last card he plays is obvious, but it still stings. Not because I want what he offers, but because I remember a girl who would have accepted it. She knows better now. We can still run. His voice deepens, letting the offer hang in the air. Together. I should laugh at him, twist the knife, make him suffer as much as I can in these last moments we have. Instead, I feel some piece of my heart break for someone so irrevocably lost. And I feel true sorrow for the other brother in the midst of all this, who tried and failed, who never deserved what's happening now. Maven, I sigh, shaking my head at his blindness. The last person who loves you isn't standing in this room. He's out there, and you burned that bridge to ashes. He goes deathly still, face white as bone. Not even his icy eyes move. When I take another step, coming within arm's length, he doesn't seem to notice. I ball a fist at my side, bracing myself. Slowly, he blinks. And I see nothing in him. Maven Kalor is empty. Very well. The dagger cuts at my throat, swiping with vicious and blistering speed. I lean backward, dodging the blow without thought. He keeps coming, keeps slicing, saying nothing. My body reacts before my brain, all instinct as I deflect his strikes. I'm faster than he is, and my arms swing in time with his movements, catching his wrists before he can do any damage with the tiny, wicked gleam of sharp iron. I have nothing except my own fists and feet. My focus is on keeping the dagger away from my skin, and I barely land any blows of my own. I twist, trying to trip him with a hooked ankle, but he steps neatly over the attempt. My first mistake, leaving my back exposed. I move as he does, and a stab for my lungs becomes a long but shallow gash across my side. Hot red blood wells up, filling the air with a copper tang. I almost expect him to apologize. Maven has never truly delighted in my pain, but he gives no quarter, and neither do I. Ignoring the spreading pain, I jab at his throat with a closed fist, hitting hard. He wheezes and stumbles, dropping to a knee. I strike again, kicking him across the jaw. The momentum sends him sideways, his eyes wide and dazed as he spits silver blood in all directions. If not for the dagger, I would use the opportunity to get my arms around his throat and squeeze until his body is cold. Instead, I leap, using my weight to keep him pinned as I fight the fingers still clawed around the dagger hilt. He growls beneath me, in spite of the jaw, trying to force me off. I have to use my teeth. The taste of silver blood poisons my mouth when I clamp down on his fingers, cutting through flesh straight to the bone. His growls turn to wailing screams. The sound rips into me, made worse by the effect of Silent Stone. Everything hurts more than it should. I push through it and pry his fingers off, biting where I must, until the dagger is mine. It's slick with his blood and mine, silver and red, darker by the second. Suddenly, his other hand is around my throat, squeezing without any restraint, crushing the air from my windpipe. He's heavier than me and uses his weight to fling me onto my back. One of his knees digs into my shoulder, keeping my dagger arm pinned. The other presses into my collarbone, right over the brand he gave me. It shrieks and stings beneath the pressure, and I feel the bone crack with an agonizing slowness. It's my turn to scream. I tried, Mare. He hisses, his cold breath washing over my face. Still struggling for air, I can't do much more than gasp and choke. My vision splits in spots, leaving only his eyes above me, too blue, too frozen, inhuman in their blankness. They are not the eyes of a fire prince. This is not Maven Kalor. That boy is gone, lost. Whoever he was born as will not be buried with him. My neck aches, bruising beneath his fingers as blood vessels burst. I can barely think, my mind narrowing to the dagger still clenched in my fist. I try to raise my arm again, but Maven's weight makes it impossible. Tears prick at my eyes when I realize this is how it ends. No lightning, no thunder. I'll die, a red girl, one of thousands crushed beneath a silver crown. Maven's grip on my throat never loosens. If anything, it becomes tighter, crushing the muscles in my neck until I feel like my spine might snap clean. The world dims, the spots across my vision spreading like black rot. But Maven leans, slightly, in the smallest way, putting more pressure on my broken collarbone and less on my shoulder, enough to free my arm. I don't think, I just swing, wildly, blade ready, as his eyes fade. They seem sad and satisfied. Before I open my eyes, I'm intensely aware of how big my tongue feels in my mouth. An odd thing to fixate on, against everything else. I try to swallow, which only exacerbates the pain in my throat. It flares up, angry, as the muscles in my neck scream in protest. I tense against the pain, limbs shifting beneath the blanket of the bed, wherever I am. "Give Sarah a second," I hear Killorn say, his voice close at my ear. He stinks of sweat and smoke. "Don't move if you can help it." "Okay," I rasp, and that hurts worse than anything before. He laughs a bit. "Don't speak, either. Might be a bit difficult for you." Normally I'd hit him, or tell him how wretched he smells, but feeling rather restrained, I elect to keep my eyes shut and jaw clenched against the ache. Sarah shuffles around the bed, her touch lingering as she weaves around to my left side. She puts her blissful hands to my neck, and I realize that the gash on my ribs must be gone. I can't feel it anymore. She tips my head just so, forcing me to lift my chin in spite of the pain. I wince, hissing a little, and Killorn puts a steadying hand on my wrist. Sarah's healing ability quickly mitigates my discomfort, pooling over the bruises and swelling. "Your vocal cords aren't as bad as I expected," she muses. Sarah Skonos has a lovely voice, light, like a bell. After so many years without a tongue, one might think she would make up for lost time, but she still speaks sparingly, her words chosen with careful intention. "They won't be difficult." "Take your time, Sarah. No rush," Killorn mutters. I snap my eyes open, glaring at him as he grins. The lights above are bright, but not harsh, hardly the fluorescent sharpness one might expect from an infirmary. I blink, trying to place myself. With a jolt, I realize I'm not in the infirmary of the barracks at all, but in one of the palace bedrooms. No wonder the bed is so soft and the room is so quiet. Killorn lets me look around, giving me the space I need. I shift, turning my wrist so I can take his hand in mine. So, you're still kicking around? Already my throat hurts less, only twinging, hardly enough to keep me quiet. In spite of my best efforts, he replies, giving me a reassuring squeeze. I can see where he tried to wipe his face, leaving streaks of clean skin edged by dirt and blood. The rest of him is just as filthy, which makes him stand out like a sore thumb against the elegant trappings of the palatial bedroom. Mostly I just stayed out of the way. Finally, I mutter. Sarah's fingers continue their dance across my neck, spreading a soothing warmth. Someone beat some sense into you. He chuckles. It certainly took long enough. The smile, the easy manner on him, even the way he holds his shoulders without weight or tension, it can only mean one thing. So, I'm guessing we won. I sigh, too surprised to even comprehend what that means. I have no idea what a real victory would even look like. Not entirely. Killorn rubs a hand over his dirty cheek, smearing the grime across the clean parts of him. Idiot, I think, kindly. The Mersives were enough to scare off the Armada, and the Lakelanders managed to limp back out to sea. I think the big shots are still negotiating a ceasefire now. I try to sit up a little, only to have Sarah press me back down, gently. But not surrender? I ask, forced to watch Killorn from the corner of my eye. He shrugs. It could become one, but no one tells me much of anything. He adds with a good-natured wink. A ceasefire isn't permanent. I grip my teeth, thinking of the Lakelanders returning a year from now. They won't let this last. Could you just enjoy being alive for one damn second? Killorn chuckles, shaking his head at me. You'll at least be pleased to know there's a joint effort underway to start cleanup of the city, silver and red. He puffs out his chest, very proud of his report. Cameron and her father are on their way down, too. They're coordinating with Cal for worker compensation. Worker compensation. Fair pay. A symbolic gesture at the very least, even if Cal is no longer a king, and whatever control he had over the country is gone. I doubt he has much, if any, say in what happens to the treasury, and frankly, I'm not concerned with that right now. Killorn knows it, but he dances around the information I want, trying to lead me away. Slowly, I shift my gaze to Sarah as she works. Up close, she smells as soothing as her touch, carrying a fresh scent like clean linens. Her steel-gray eyes focus on my neck, finishing up the last of my bruises. Sarah, do we have a casualty count? I ask quietly. Killorn shifts uncomfortably in the chair next to my bed, coughing a little. He shouldn't be surprised by the question. Sarah certainly isn't. She doesn't break her rhythm. Don't worry yourself with that, the skin healer answers. Everyone's alive, Killorn offers quickly. Farley, Davidson, Cal. I already knew as much. He wouldn't be smiling, and I would have woken up to a great deal more chaos if any of them had died. No, he knows exactly what I'm asking, who I'm asking about. All done, Sarah says, ignoring my question fully. Instead, she offers a tight-lipped smile as she steps back from my bedside. You should rest now. You need it, Mare Barrow. Nodding, I watch her go, seeing herself out of the bedroom with a sweep of her silvery clothing. Unlike the other healers I remember, she has no uniform to speak of anymore. Probably ruined in the battle, when she attended to so many dead or dying. The door closes softly behind her, leaving Killorn and me to weather the heavy silence. Killorn, I finally mutter, prodding at him with tentative fingers. He glances at me, watching with a pained expression, as I draw myself up against the pillows. Ashamed, his eyes flicker to my healed side. Even though the wound is gone, his expression darkens. So does his voice. "You were bleeding to death when we found you," he whispers, as if even the memory is too horrible to recall at a normal volume. "We didn't know if you would, if Sarah could." His voice trails away, laced with a pain I know all too well. I've seen Kaloran bleeding to death too, when he nearly lost his life in Newtown. I guess I repaid the favor. Swallowing hard, I touch my ribs, feeling nothing but unbroken skin beneath the folds of a fresh shirt. I guess the gash was worse than I thought. Not that it matters anymore. And Maven? I can barely say his name. Kaloran holds my gaze, his expression unchanging, giving no indication of an answer for an agonizing moment, long enough for me to wonder what answer I'm hoping to get, which future I want to live in. When he drops his eyes, focusing on my hands, my blankets, anywhere but my face, I realize what he's saying. A muscle twitches in his cheek as he clenches his jaw. Something in me unwinds, a coil finally springing loose. I sigh and lie back, shutting my eyes as a storm of emotions rolls over me. All I can do is bear it as the world spins. Maven is dead. Shame and pride battle in equal measure, as well as sorrow and relief. For a second, I think I might actually throw up. But the nausea passes, and I open my eyes again to find everything in its place. Kaloran waits silently. It's odd for him to be so patient. Or it would have been a year ago, when he was just the fish boy, another kid from the Stilts with no future but whatever tomorrow held. I was the same. "Where's the body?" "I don't know," he says. And I see no lie in him. He has no reason to lie about this. As with Ilara, I'll need to see the corpse, to know it's well and truly finished. But his body frightens me more than hers, for obvious reason. Death is a mirror, and to look at him like that, I'm afraid I'll see myself. Or worse, see him as I thought he was. Does Cal know what I did? My voice breaks as I speak, suddenly fraught with emotion. I press a hand to my mouth, trying to calm myself. I refuse to cry over him. I refuse. Kaloran merely watches. I wish he would hug me, or hold my hand, or maybe bring me something sweet to stuff in my mouth. Instead, he pulls away to stand up. He looks on me with such pity, it makes me wince. I don't expect him to understand, and I don't want him to. Like Sarah, he crosses to the door, and I feel suddenly abandoned. "Kaloran," I protest, until he turns the knob, and someone else steps into the room. Cal fills the chamber with warmth, as if someone just lit a crackling fire. His gleaming red armor is gone, replaced by simple clothing. He wears a mismatch of colors, without a stitch of black or scarlet, because they aren't his colors anymore. Kaloran slips out behind him, leaving us alone. Before I can even wonder if Cal heard my question, he answers it. "You only did what you had to do," he says, slowly taking Kaloran's chair. But he keeps his distance, letting the inches stretch between us in a gaping rift. It isn't difficult to guess why. "I'm sorry." He goes watery before me as tears rise in my eyes. "I killed his brother. I took him away. I killed a murderer, a torturer, an evil person, twisted and broken. A man who would have killed me if I hadn't stopped him. Killed everyone I love. A boy made into a monster. A boy with no chance and no hope. Cal, I'm so sorry." He leans forward, one hand on my blanket, careful to keep out of reach. The silk beneath our fingers is smooth and cold, a long road of blue-gray embroidery. He stares at the pattern on the blanket, tracing the thread without speaking. I fight the urge to sit up and touch his cheek, to make him look me in the eye and say what he wants to say. We both knew this would happen. We both knew Maven was beyond our help. It doesn't stop the pain, though. And his is so much deeper than mine. What now? He whispers, as if to himself. Or maybe we were wrong. Maybe he could have been saved somehow. The thought cuts me apart, and the first tear falls. Maybe I'm just a murderer, too. Only one thing is certain. We will never know. What now? I reply, turning away. I stare at the window, the sky spotted with haze and weak starlight. Minutes stretch and pass. We don't speak. No one comes to see me, or find Cal to pull him away. I almost wish someone would. Until his fingers move, brushing against mine, barely touching. But it's enough. Epilogue. Mare.
Are you sure you don't want to go back and see it?
I stare at Killorn like he's just grown a second head. The suggestion is so absurd I almost don't answer. But he looks at me, expectant, innocent as a child. Or at least as innocent as he can be. Killorn was never particularly innocent, even when we were children. He shoves his hands in the pockets of his Montfort uniform, waiting for my response. See what? I scoff, shrugging my shoulders as we walk across the Archeon airfield. Clouds hang low on the horizon, obscuring the setting sun, as well as the smoke still trailing from parts of the city. It's been a week, and they're still putting out fires. A house on rickety sticks? It's probably ransacked, if someone else isn't living there. I mutter, thinking of my old home in the Stilts. I haven't been back, and I have little desire to ever return. I wouldn't be surprised if the Stilt house were no longer standing. I can easily imagine Maven destroying it out of spite, when he was alive. I don't care to find out either way. Why do you want to go back to the Stilts? Killorn shakes his head, almost bouncing in his steps. Nope, anything I cared about isn't there anymore. Flattery will get you nowhere, I reply. He seems oddly eager to return to Montfort. What about Cameron? I add, careful to keep my voice low. Currently, Cameron and her parents are helping everyone else coordinate with the tech towns. Obviously, they know the former slums best and how to repurpose them. What about her? Killorn smirks down at me, offering a shrug of his own. He's trying to throw me off. A hint of a flush dusts his cheeks with color. She'll be coming out to Montfort in a month or so, with the Red Norton contingent and some new bloods, once things are a bit more settled. To train? His blush spreads. Sure. I can't help but grin. Must remember to tease him later, I think, as Farley approaches with a few command generals in tow. Swan nods in greeting, bowing her head. I extend a hand to her, nodding. Thank you, General Swan. Call me Addison, she replies. The older woman matches my smile. I think we might be able to do away with code names for a while. Farley just glances between us, pretending to be annoyed. If only this jet were powered by hot air, we'd never have to charge up between the two of you. She says sharply, her eyes betraying one of her rare good moods. Smiling, I take her arm. She leans into the embrace, hardly like her at all. You act like I can't actually charge a jet, Farley. She only rolls her eyes. Like Killorn and me, she's ready to go back to Montfort. I can only imagine how excited she must be to leave Norda behind and return to her daughter. Clara is growing bigger in leaps and bounds, happy and safe, with no memory of what came before her, not even her father. The thought of shade always darkens even the brightest of days, and now is no different. But the pain is less, somehow. Still an ache, still bone deep, but not so sharp. It doesn't take my breath away anymore. Come on, Farley urges, forcing me to match her quicker pace. The faster we board, the faster we're airborne. Is that how it works? I can't help but retort. A cluster of people stands by the jet, idling on the runway, waiting for us and the rest of the group departing for Montfort today. Davidson is already gone, having returned to his nation a few days ago. Some of his officials have been left behind to coordinate, and I spot Tahir among them. He's probably relaying all this to his brothers right now, allowing the Montfort Premier to track the rebuilding process in real time. Julian stands out from the pack, wearing new clothes for what is possibly the first time in his life. They gleam, golden like his house colors once were, flashing brightly in the late afternoon sun. Sarah waits at his side, as does Annabelle. The old woman looks incomplete without her crown, and she regards me with naked disinterest. Make it quick, Barrow, Farley says, gesturing for Kaloran to follow her onto the jet. The pair of them nod at the silvers as they pass, giving me the space I need for my own farewells. I don't see Cal with his uncle or grandmother, but I don't expect him to stand in line. He waits farther down the jetway, separated from the rest of them. Julian extends his arms to me, and I embrace him tightly, inhaling the warm scent of old paper that still seems to cling to him through everything. After a long minute, he pushes me back gently. Oh, come on. I'll see you in a month or so. Like Cameron, Julian is scheduled to visit Montfort in a few weeks. Officially, he's an envoy of the Norton Silvers. But I expect he'll spend more time combing through whatever archives Davidson puts at his disposal, utilizing the time to investigate the emergence of new bloods. I grin up at my old teacher, patting him on the shoulder. I doubt you'll be able to tear yourself out of the Montfort vaults long enough to say hello. At his side, Sarah raises her head. I'll make sure he does, she says quietly, taking Julian's arm. Annabelle is not so understanding. She glares at me one last time before scoffing aloud, disgusted by my presence, and walking off at a brisk pace. I don't blame her. After all, in her eyes, I'm still the reason her grandson denied a dynasty. Cast away a crown for something as stupid as the love of a red girl. She hates me for that, even if it isn't true. Annabelle Larrilan may not see reason, but she does see logic. You've opened a door that can't be closed, Julian says quietly, watching the old queen clamber into a waiting transport. She couldn't put Cal back on the throne now, even if he wanted it. What about the rift? The Lakelands, Piedmont? Julian cuts me off with a gentle shake of his head. I think you've earned the right to not worry about such things for a while. He pats my hand kindly. There's rioting. There's movement. Reds crossing our borders by the thousands. No, the stone is truly rolling, my dear. For a second I feel overcome, equal parts happy and afraid. This can't last, I think again, knowing the words to be true. Sighing, I let go of them. This isn't over, but it is for me, for now. I have to hug Julian one more time. Thank you, I whisper. Again, he pushes me back, his eyes shiny. Yes, well, enough of that. My ego's already bigger than it should be, he stammers out. You've wasted enough time with me, he adds, giving me another push in the direction of his nephew. Go on. I don't need any more prodding than that, in spite of the nerves currently wreaking havoc on me. Gulping a little, I pass the rest of the dignitaries from our reforged alliance, smiling as I go. No one stops me, allowing me to approach the former king unimpeded. Cal feels me coming. Let's walk, he says, already moving. I follow him under one of the wings of our jet, stepping into shadow. Farther down the runway, an engine roars to life, close enough to shield us from anyone who might bother to eavesdrop. "I'd come with you if I could," he says suddenly, turning around to watch me with burning eyes of bronze. "I'm not asking you to do that," I reply. The words are familiar. We've had the same discussion about a dozen times by now. "You have to be here to pick up the pieces, and there's work to be done in the West. Siron, Taraxis, if we can do something." I trail off, imagining those far-off countries, vast and strange. "It's better this way, I think." "Better?" Cal snaps, and the air warms around him. Gently, I put a hand on his wrist. "You think walking away is better? Why? I'm not a king anymore. I'm not even royal. I'm..." "Don't say nothing, Cal. You're not nothing." I see accusation in his eyes, his skin hot beneath my fingers. It hurts to look at him, to see the pain I'm causing. "I'm what you want me to be," he forces out, his voice a little strangled. I'm seized by the realization that I don't know when I'll see him again. But I can't look back up. It will just make this more difficult. "Don't pretend like you gave all this up because I asked you to. We both know that isn't what happened. For your mother, for what is right, for yourself. And I'm glad for it," I mutter, still staring at his hand in mine. He tries to pull me closer, but I stand my ground. "I need time, Cal. So do you." His voice drops so low he could be growling. It makes me shiver. "I decide what I want and need. Then give me the same courtesy." Without thinking, I look back up sharply, surprising him. Even though I feel anything but strong, I play the part well. "Let me figure out who I am now. Not Marina, not the Lightning Girl, not even Mare Barrow, but whoever came out on the other side of all this. He needs space too, whether he can admit it or not. We need to heal. Rebuild. Just like this country and the rest that might follow. Worst of all, best of all, we have to do it without each other. There's still a gap between us, a rift. Even in death, Maven is good at keeping us apart. Cal will never admit it, but I saw the resentment in his eyes that day, the sorrow and accusation. I killed his brother, and that weighs on him still. I know it weighs on me. Cal searches my eyes, his own flashing as the sunlight above us turns red. His eyes could be made of flame. Whatever he's looking for, a weakness, a crack in my resolve, he doesn't find it. One blazing hand trails up my neck until it stills at the side of my jaw, fingers resting behind my ear. His skin isn't hot enough to burn, not like Maven's, which marked me forever. Cal wouldn't do that, even if I asked him to. "How long?" he whispers. "I don't know. It's the truth, easy to admit. I have no idea how long it will take to feel like myself again, or whoever I am now. But I am only 18. I have time." The next part is far more difficult, and my breath hitches. "I won't ask you to wait for me." When his lips brush mine, the touch is fleeting, a farewell. For however long it takes. The Paradise Valley is well named. It stretches for miles. A rolling plain in the bowl of the mountains. The rivers and lakes are pristine and strange, unlike any place I've ever seen before, not to mention the wildlife. No wonder Davidson sent us here for a little peace and quiet. It seems untouched, removed from the rest of the world. We walk the path at dawn, careful to keep away from the red-hot geyser fields running the length of the clearing. Most of the watery pools are still and flat, but they spiral in a rainbow of colors. beautiful, but deadly, able to cook a person in a matter of seconds. Or so I've been told. In the distance, one of them spits boiling water and clouds of steam high into the hazy purple sky. The stars fade one by one. It's cold, and I pull the heavy wool shawl tighter around my shoulders. Our footsteps echo against the wooden walkway beneath us, built up and over the rust-colored basin floor. I glance at Gisa sidelong, watching her keep stride. She's more willowy these days, and her dark red hair hangs in a long braid. The breakfast basket dangles in her hand, swinging idly. She wanted to watch the sunrise over the big spring, and who am I to deny my little sister anything? "Look at the colors," she murmurs as we reach our destination. Indeed, the big hot spring looks like something out of a dream, ringed in red, then yellow, then bright green, and finally the deepest, purest blue. It doesn't seem real. We were well warned, and in spite of the urge, neither of us dips a finger in the waters below. I don't fancy boiling the skin off my bones. Instead, Gisa sits down on the walkway, her legs folded beneath herself. She pulls out a tiny notebook and starts to sketch, occasionally scribbling notes. I wonder what this place might inspire in her. I'm more inclined to eat, and I fish through the basket, pulling out a pair of still-warm breakfast rolls. Mom made sure we were well-provisioned before we set off for the morning. "Do you miss him?" she says suddenly, not looking up. The question catches me off guard, especially the vagueness. She could be talking about anybody. "Killoran is fine. He's back in Ascendant, and Cameron will be there in a few days." Gisa doesn't mind the thought of someone else with Killoran. She cares more for the pretty shop girl back in the city these days. "I don't mean Killoran," she says pointedly, annoyed with my dodging. "Oh?" I ask, raising an eyebrow dramatically. She doesn't seem amused. "Of course I miss him. I mean Cal. I mean Shade. I mean Maven, even in the smallest of pieces." Gisa doesn't press me further. The silence feeds me as much as the breakfast. It's easy to forget out here, to feel lost in another time. I relish the detachment, even with the usual worries clinging to the corners of my mind. What happens now? I still haven't figured that out. And for a little while, I don't have to. "Bison," Gisa says softly, raising a hand to point across the geyser basin. I tense up, ready to spring. If one of those beasts gets too close, it'll be my responsibility to get Gisa out of here safely. My lightning prickles beneath my skin, ready to unleash. It feels almost unfamiliar these days. I haven't been training or sparring, not since we returned to Montfort. I keep telling myself I need the rest. Bree and Tramie keep telling me I'm lazy. The bison are far off, 50 yards at least, and lumbering slowly in the opposite direction. The herd is small, but impressive. A dozen at least, all shaggy and dark brown, moving with surprising grace for things so big and heavy. I remember my last encounter with a bison. It wasn't exactly peaceful. Gisa returns to her sketch, thoughtful. "Davidson's guide told me something interesting." The premier was good enough to send an escort with us into the valley. "Oh, what's that?" I ask, not taking my eyes off the herd. "If they bolt, I'll be ready." My sister continues to chatter, oblivious to the possible threat currently picking its way across the basin. I'm quietly happy that she doesn't know enough to be afraid. "She said that once the bison were almost gone. Thousands upon thousands hunted and killed, maybe millions, until only a few were left on the entire continent." "That's impossible," I scoff. "They're all over paradise and the plains." "Well, that's what the guide said," Gisa replies, sounding annoyed by my dismissal. and it's her job to know what goes on up here. Fine, I sigh. So what happened? They came back. Slowly, but they came back. My brow furrows, confused by the simplicity of her answer. How? People, she says bluntly. I thought the people killed them. They did, but something changed, she replied, her voice sharpening. Now I think she despairs of my comprehension. Something big enough to change course. I don't know why, but I'm reminded of something Julian taught me once, long ago. We destroy. It's the constant of our kind. I've seen that firsthand. In Archeon, in Harbor Bay, on every battlefield. In the way Reds were treated and are still treated across the continent. But that world is changing. We destroy, but we also rebuild. The bison move off, slowly disappearing into the trees on the horizon, seeking new grasslands, oblivious to two small girls sitting at the edge of the water. They returned from slaughter, so will we. As we make our way back to the cabin, now sweating beneath the heat of the rising sun, Geesa chatters on about everything she's learned in the past week. She likes the guide, and I think Bree does too, in more ways than one. My mind wanders, as it usually does in these small moments, drifting back through memory, and forward too. We'll return to the Montfort capital in a few weeks. I wonder how different the world will be by then. It was already unrecognizable when we left. Evangeline Samos, of all people, was living in Ascendant, last I heard, as an honored guest of the Premier. Part of me still hates her, and her family, for all they took from us. But I'm learning to live with the anger, to keep it close without letting it eat me alive. Slowly, I touch the stones pierced along my ear, naming each one in turn. They ground me. Pink, red, purple, green. Bree, Tramie, Shade, Killorn. I couldn't stay, I think again, for the thousandth time. I still don't know if he'll wait for me. But maybe, when I go back. My fingers brush the last earring, the newest. It's another red gem. Red is fire. Red is my blood. I will go back. This is Amanda Dolan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Warstorm by Victoria Aveyard. Presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Elgin Productions, executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Victoria Aveyard. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.